few seconds. Oh, I'm ready. Up the clock. We think we should start. We welcoming you and declaring the briefing and presentation by the department and PMTE. Very kind to us that we now have almost the full house in front of the honorable members. So we quite happy about that. We are also honorable members thinking that we must utilize our presence fruitfully for the committee and parliament. We thinking that we must ensure that you get the draft report of the BRRR within a few hours from now, so that if you agree with me by 2 o'clock after lunch, having gone to lunch, because this is supposed to finish, so there won't be lunch provided by Parliament. We'll go and see how to feed ourselves. Honorable Stoller already approached me to take me out for lunch from Taiwan. So you need to give some briefing. So we're suggesting that at 2 we reconvene now as portfolio committee honored members where to look into that draft, BRRR, and beef it up as much as we can, so that come Wednesday we have already had it. We then look into finalizing. We worried that Friday is not always good for all members. In terms of willing to be here, you may be willing, but circumstances may not allow. So at least that we are here today, tomorrow, we think we must utilize that opportunity so that at least the report must be influenced by honorable members. So if you find with that arrangement, I'll be happy. I can see that Dr. Fig is happy, Honorable Pidan is happy, the gentleman from Taiwan is more than happy to be in South Africa. But he was comparing development levels. Now he's feeling we are like the Bundus when he looks into the development in Taiwan. So Dr. Majapa is fine, Lilim Jaba is fine, so Namateva is fine, so Dr. Edel is fine. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That is how we will then move. Minister, thank you very much for coming once more, and the DM, we appreciate when the head of the department is around, we feel more happy. We're even happy that we have seen the DG, where is the DG? I've seen the DG, so we're happy that you are here. Fezel is here. So we see. So when we see him, we are very happy. So without them taking much time, would go through the apologies. We'll give the committee secretary an opportunity to take us through the apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everyone present. There's 2 apologies that were registered in our office this morning. Honorable Masiela and Honorable Adams. They will be joining us a little bit later. Thanks.
Thank you very much. In terms of the minutes, we're suggesting that we compile all the minutes and we'll discuss them in the afternoon meeting so that we don't really have a lot of backlog. So we'll dump them for now so that we deal with almost all the outstanding minutes. So which means we go straight to the presentation, but before that, the minister already requested to be with us within an hour and then attend other commitment that the nation would want him to do, and we have agreed with the minister. Thank you very much. Then we'll do the introductions first, starting with let's go to the doctor. Dr. Madaba. Introductions. Put it on.
My name is Tolliwe Madaba.
Lindy. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Malcolm Figg, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Dennis Ryder is my name, also a member of the committee.
Thank you.
I remain Leta Sufiltown member.
Okay, but I think it's Dudu Mateve. Thank you.
Sanbonan, Ekama Ketamabala was told. Oilunga El Komit.
Thank you very much. My name is Humphrey Menezi, the chair of the committee. Thank you very much. Well, then, let me finish, Minister, the staff. Secretary?
The name is Mona Chobotwana, Committee Secretary, PC on Public Works.
Good morning, Shoaib Nathan, Content Advisor.
Good morning, Ines Stickley, Researcher, Portfolio Committee on Public Works.
Nomdu?
Good morning, I'm Nomdu Nagasa, the Committee Advisor.
Thank you. Minister?
Minister.
Jeremy Was it on? Was it on? Oh, the other one was on. Oh, okay. Okay. No. Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. It was Masham Public Works.
Thank you.
Good morning, India. Pedro, DDTTRC.
Good morning, my name is Aaron Mazibuko, Public Works.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members, Minister and Deputy Minister. My name is Sam Vigela, I'm the DG of Public Works.
Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Jacob Marova, I'm the acting head of the PMPE.
Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Manchester Salas from PMTA.
Thank you. We'll move on.
Good morning, Peter Chiapasco from the Program Management Office in PMTE. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Ms. Chapman. I'm Dr. Sivan. I have the Real Estate Investment
Service. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Swansi Matthews. I'm responsible for the Immovable Asset Register.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, Minister and Deputy Minister. My name is Nelita Makobele. I'm the Head of Facilities Management, Public Works.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Rendani Mashokwane from Internal Audit.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Patu Mukhotu. I head construction management.
Thank you.
Good morning. Lesi Chatona from Public Works.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Belena Funamaza and I'm PMT Finance.
Thank
Good morning, Chair, honourable members. My name is Stanley Anderson. I'm the DDG for the EPWP.
Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. Minister, Deputy Minister, my name is Ignatius Sario. I'm from EPWP. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I realize we don't have a mic at the back. You can use the mic there in front. Let's start with you.
Good morning. I'm Sonia Legenza from Public Works.
Good morning. I'm Sibone Sosokela from Public Works.
Honourable members, Minister, Deputy Minister and colleagues, I am Florence Rabada and I'm in the Policy, Research and Regulations branch. Thank you.
Oh, that is Florence, yeah? Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister, Deputy Minister and colleagues. My name is Gaya Govinder, Acting Divisional Head Real Estate Management Services, PMT, in the Department of Public.
Thank you.
Honourable Chair, good morning. Honourable members, Minister, Deputy Minister. My name is Clive Mchisa, Head of Corporate Services.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. I'm George Mugula from the Office of the Minister.
Thank you.
Good morning, John Lewis from the Minister's Office.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Minister, and Honourable Members. I'm Zwandile Sazona, Head of Prestige.
Thank you.
Morning, everyone. I'm Sinazo Matezu from PMG.
Yes,
good morning. I'm Bob Ndara from FFC.
Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Llewellyn Prince. I'm a journalist with Media 24.
Good morning, I'm Stanley Bilitele, a reporter for the City Press newspaper.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mashallah, and the Uganda.
Good morning. My name is Mpomo Shepa, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
Thank you very much. I hope everybody is now given the opportunity. We'll then hand over to the Minister and then for presentation and then maybe the Master. She wants to do that. And then the DG and then we move in that order. Minister?
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister, the officials of Public Works, ladies and gentlemen, on a lighter note, Chair, when you say, oh, that's Florence, but the mother to the pride of the nation, Kahisorawa, in cricket. Yes. And at some stage, we also had the father of, what's the guy?
Temba
Bavuma, also a public way. Yes. So it's a very big a big family. Thank you for the opportunity. We take very seriously as Public Works the presentation of the annual report and financial statement as part of our obligation to account to Parliament. It is time when the department accounts for the way it has managed the budget allocated by Parliament. And the process provides for a double level of scrutiny as the Auditor General assists the committee to perform its oversight function and to produce budgetary review and recommendations report. And that is why all our branches and units we have to account are here. The process of compliance and oversight, it's not just an end in itself. I believe it also assists government departments to improve the performance and service delivery. And I can assure you, Chairperson and members, that the department is working closely with the Office of the AG to address the audit findings and to implement action plans developed jointly. I will leave the details to the officials, but I would like to flag certain general trends and challenges. First, over time, the broad trend is one of improvement in audit findings. For the main vote, 4 years of unqualified opinion is progressively reducing number of findings. This after 8 consecutive years, you all remember, of adverse findings, the last in 3 involving disclaimers. Similarly, the overall trend has been upward for the PMT, the Property Management Trade Entity, with an adverse opinion in the previous year, largely due to the new demands of meeting the GRAP accounting standards, to a qualified opinion with findings in the year under review. In relation to the qualified areas, the AG flags improvements made due to the corrections made as a result of the audit findings. So in other words, as a department, we take seriously the findings and we implement recommendations. So we are moving in the right directions, although we cannot be satisfied until we have a clean audit all round. Second, Chairperson, I want to flag the AG's finding that there has been significant reduction in unauthorized, irregular, as well as fruitless and wasteful spending over the last 5 years. Again, we are not complacent, and the target is to eliminate such spending. There are still areas of serious concerns, and I can also assure you that that cases in the PMT have not been investigated in the year under review will be investigated, of course, during the current year. And I also want to comment on the AG's findings on the management and delivery on key programs in relation to spending, performance and reporting. I think members are aware of the challenges in relation to the EPWP, where we are required to report on projects over which we have little control. So if, for example, a municipality fails to take a register of attendance, that becomes a finding against EPW and EPWP in particular. I can assure you that the branch is working very hard to provide training, guidelines, and systems to assist the thousands of the project implementers. The AG also flags that this situation leads to large-scale under-reporting of the work opportunities and training provided by EPWP. So we still have a long way to go in fully reporting on the EPWP's achievements. But it is in the construction project management division of the PMT that the AG goes on to what we call the granular details. The new term we have to use in its findings of the unauthorized, irregular and fruitless expenditure over a number of the multi-year projects. There, I think we're very vulnerable. And I can offer the assurance that each of these projects has now been fully investigated. And the officials will provide detailed response. But we must know what is happening in these projects. and some of those projects, some of you might have listened to what was happening with SCOA when they dealt with the issues from our side. To say the least, we have been an embarrassment when it comes to those projects. Similar findings are made for the entity IDT, the Independent Development Trust. So members will want to know, what is Public Works planning to do about the state of affairs? In fact, it is largely a PMTE problem, and I would argue that we've made general progress on aspects of turnaround plan, the clean audit project, developing a reliable immovable register, establishing the PMTE, and on compliance issues generally. But in the meantime, at operational level, we're often found wanting. And this is what the AG findings on construction projects point to. So let me conclude by briefly sharing with the committee a major initiative undertaken by the PMTE to address operational challenges, particularly in areas of asset management on the leases, prestige and facilities management. And we have also included the IDT in the scope of this new initiative. We are in the process of establishing what we call a high performance center in the office of the project management office under the head of the PMTE. It's made up of experienced built environment professionals able to provide the following: a rapid diagnostic of problems, proper coordination and reporting systems and accountability that brings to the organization, an early warning system for problem areas, for example, unsafe buildings, project delays, the flexibility and agility to respond quickly and appropriately to support line functions in addressing the crisis. And this high performance center is due to go live, Chairperson and members, now on the 1st of October. What we are saying, we're not ready between now and the new financial year to accept just new projects, because that has been the weakness of Public Works. Taking on projects, but projects behind are not finished. We must close these projects. Most of that is the end of the term of this government. We're very clear, and this team is going to help us not to replace, go into all the projects in the country, identify the blockages, what has to be done, and tell the authorities, the officials. I've already been in discussions with Minister of Public Enterprises and the Treasury in relation to, as they are decommissioning in ESCOM, in Lephalale, those high-performing engineers, project managers, we need them. We've already had sessions with the engineers, the architects, all the professional groups, the project managers, to give us the people who are going to help in this regard. But we're not going to demand new money. We have to work within what we are having. As a result, rather than continuing appointing, we must hold those appointments and recycle this thing and look at the money through permission which we can be able to use so that we close this project. That's the intention. So the core functions therefore of this is to go live in November, and I believe that this initiative will greatly improve the ability of the department to better manage its construction and other projects. This will also bring a greater degree of professionalism in our relations with contractors, so that contract management is central to this initiative, because that is the weakest point. Contract management, when you see all these deviations and variations, it's lack of contract management. So ultimately the objective is to improve service delivery to clients or to client departments so that they in turn can provide improved service to the public. But one issue I think I must flag, you will hear about problems of facilities management. But this is not just a public works problem. Departments which are sitting with some little money for maintenance, they do not do that maintenance the day to day. They expect public works to do it when they sit with the money. As and when public works has to do the major upgrades, the building has so deteriorated because there was no day to day maintenance, neglected by the very client department. That's one critical area, but we're starting the discussions with the Treasury in relation to this, so that we talk about the money, where they are supposed to do things for themselves. Perhaps we need a separate session on this high-performance initiative in the future, when it is up and running. The main point I wanted to convey today to the committee was that we've heard the AG and we've listened. Because we can't just be denialists. And we can't come in year in, year out with the same issues being raised to us. So we've identified these operational problems and we're taking action to address this. So this also goes hand in hand with our major strategic priority to fully operationalize the PMT, which I've spoken to the committee about in the previous occasions. Finally, Chair, my thanks to the Portfolio Committee on Public Works for their continued support, even when they take us to task. That's part of accountability. Sometimes it's not nice, but I must accept that all of us have to account. These members have to account to the people, ministers have to account to parliament, and officials have to account to the ministries. That must be understood. And which it means that we have to hold us and our officials account. Thank you also to all the dedicated DPW and PMT officials for their commitment and hard work. I think ours is the first matter towards a clean audit as we close the fourth administration. With those few words, allow me to hand over to the officials. Thank you very much.
Very much, Minister. Didi?
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We are going to start with the presentation now, which is going to run through the whole presentation with respect to the main vote and the PMTE, after which there will be a presentation which is going to focus on the financial information of the main vote, and thereafter the PMTE. I concur with the Minister. The presentation will show some improvements in certain areas and also some few regression. Where there are regression, there will be indications of how best can we ensure that we continue improving in those areas. I'll request my colleague to start with the presentation, and thereafter all of us will make contributions after the presentation. Thanks very much.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee. Chairperson, this annual report for 2017-18 is variously located and also must be seen in the context of the various elements of our turnaround strategy. And in fact, it must also be seen in the context of the department's five-year strategic plan, 2015-2020, of which the current year is year number four. And therefore, our performance must also be measured and also be seen in terms of our progress as measured against our five-year goals and targets. And Chairperson, once looks at the annual report as a whole, it reflects progress, as the Minister has articulated, both from a performance point of view and also from the point of view of the audit outcomes. Going on to slide number six, Chairperson, this is the breakdown of the annual report, the five chapters, and we'll be giving the committee an executive overview as well as a detailed performance information and financial information with respect to these key five areas that make up the content of the annual report. Chairperson, in terms of the program structure, the slide reflects that from 2017-18, We have five programs in DPW: the main administration program, the intergovernmental coordination program, expanded public works, the policy program, and the prestige program. In PMTE, we have the administration program, the real estate investment services program, construction project management, real estate management services, real estate information and registry services, and facilities management. This more or less reflects the asset management life cycle of the PMT, and the programs also then shadow the core business and the way the core business is carried out. We also have, between DPW and PMTE, shared service function, which is made up of corporate services, which in turn is broken down into legal services, human resources, and information technology support. We also have a governance, risk, and compliance branch, which deals mainly with performance, anti-corruption, risk management, and the like, as well as intergovernmental coordination, which, given the fact that the public works function is a concurrent function, is an important element of what we do. And then SCM as well, where PMTE then has their own supply chain service and financial service on the other side. As we move forward, Chairperson, and we operationalize the PMTE, you'll see more of the shared service go into the PMTE business, given that they are 90%, up to 90% of the budget of the joint DPW and PMT appropriation. Chairperson, with your permission, I'll now go into an overview of our achievements for the year. And we will follow a thematic approach. We believe that covering these 10 themes will give a good overview of our performance during the year. We'll cover the policy environment, governance, anti-fraud and corruption, sector coordination and the concurrent mandate, the public employment programs as reflected in the expanded public works program, real estate management, which is our leasing business, construction project management, as well as facilities management, which is a critical area of our business. Chairperson, moving to DPW, the year under review was important and constituted a number of achievements in the policy branch, in that the property management empowerment policy was adopted, and in fact this empowerment policy will then provide the catalyst for the transformation in the property industry, where ownership and other patterns are very skewed. So this particular initiative is intended to leverage and to lead us in that particular regard. Moving on to the more important initiative within the policy branch, the department embarked on a process of reviewing the public works policy framework. However, due to insufficient capacity, this has been delayed, and in fact, we are behind schedule with respect to our five-year target. Chairperson, I believe that I wouldn't be incorrect in saying on behalf of the department that this entire program with respect to the policy initiatives within this branch was poorly conceived, in that it already pre-conceived the outcomes of such a process. What we are now doing is we are pursuing an evidence-based policy review, and the outcomes of this policy review will be completed by March 2019, and that will inform any particular initiatives we undertake with respect to policy development going forward. It will identify past, current, and policy problems, their manifestations and effects, and also identify policy priorities for the future, desired policy, strategic direction, and available resources in order to achieve the state's socioeconomic developmental objectives. Chairperson, moving on to the expropriation bill, this was obviously tabled in the Assembly in 2015 and passed by both the House and the National Council of Provinces in 2016, but was remitted to Parliament on procedural grounds. As things stand, there are a number of developments playing out in the background with respect to expropriation of land without compensation, and it is probable, or possible at least, that the expropriation legislation may serve as a law of general application in order to enable such kind of expropriation. And the policy branch is currently working in this particular area to prepare for any eventuality and support the process. Moving on to governance, Chairperson and members of the committee, we view the MPAT process of the Management Performance Assessment 2 that is managed by the Presidency as a critical form of measurement about the extent to which we are improving governance processes in the organization. And the governance processes are obviously seen as important as a platform for effective service delivery. From 2012, when MPAT was first initiated, the department scored at compliance level of 25%. We have now moved to a 70% compliance level. chairperson and members of the committee. MPAT comprises four particular areas, key performance areas is governance, strategic management, human resource management, as well as financial management. So the department is on 70% during the year under review, and we're moving, hopefully, in year 5 to 100% compliance. We're working very hard to do that. During the year under review, we also developed risk management frameworks and policies, risk appetite frameworks, a combined assurance framework that requires us to work in a synchronized session with our internal audit unit, our governance unit, as well as the Office of the Auditor General in ensuring that we have synergy between the respective oversight processes, and then we provide operational effectiveness in the department. We also initiated business continuity frameworks, planning M&E and fraud and corruption frameworks in the department. And going forward, Chairperson, we've also adopted as a department a compliance framework during the year under review. And the compliance framework is intended to provide oversight and risk management of the entire compliance universe going forward to ensure that we minimize fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure, and the department generally complies with all rules and regulations that apply to it. Moving over to fraud and corruption, Chairperson, these are cumulative figures since the commencement of the turnaround strategy of the department. To date, at March 2018, we conducted 249 investigations, 24 of which related to the year-end review, on a series of allegations of fraud and corruption. 222 of these have been completed, 15 are at various stages of investigation, and various others have been referred to other law enforcement agencies. The outcomes of all of this, Chairperson and members of the committee, is that 236 disciplinary proceedings were initiated against department officials, of which 169 have been completed. Of these 169 proceedings, sanctions against officials range from dismissals, written warnings, and suspensions without pay. Chairperson, we appeared before the committee on the 2nd of September 2018 to explain our anti-corruption strategy. And as a consequence of our anti-corruption strategy presentation to Parliament, a number of issues were raised by the committee, the satisfaction, in fact, of the level of fraud and corruption. Even though our anti-corruption strategy seemed to uncover fraudulent practices, the committee wished to see some kind of proactive prevention of fraud and corruption. And as a consequence, Chairperson, the EXCO of the department adopted various resolutions at the end of September. On the operational level, senior managers are now required to assume accountability for managing fraud risks within their respective areas of responsibility, and fraud risk management should form part of the performance agreements of managers. Fraud risk management must also be incorporated in the business plans of all branches and divisions. Giving prominence to resolution and accountability, departmental governance structures such as the Accountability Management Committee, the Risk Management Committee, and EXCO should hold heads of branches and divisions to account for the management of these fraud risks within their respective areas of operations. And timeliness and complete implementation of systemic weaknesses made on investigation reports must be implemented to prevent reoccurrence of similar transgressions. With immediate effect, the department adopted the Integrity Management Framework, which is being made available in the organization for rollout to foster a new and renewed organizational culture within the department and the PMTE. And finally, with respect to consequence management, improved consequence management within the department is there to serve as a deterrence to fraud and corruption, and management, senior management, and executives are being held accountable for non-performance within the areas of operation through stringent measurement of their performance agreements. Chairperson, moving on to sector coordination, we've seen the third year of the deployment of a separate intergovernmental relations branch in DPW to deal separately with intergovernmental coordination. We've seen a general maturity of this particular function. And they probably move into a second phase of their level of maturity as a result of a number of reviews undertaken by the department. Currently, we operate through the MINMEC process, and particular initiatives include the GIAMA Implementation Technical Committee, where implementation of GIAMA is then implemented on a consistent basis throughout the public works sector. We also have the CFO's Forum, where financial management and audit issues are discussed and deliberated. Asset register management issues, where there's a sector initiative to put together asset resistance within the various components of the public works sector, IDMS implementation, and also performance management through an initiative called NAPROF, the National and Provincial Performance Monitoring and Evaluation Forum. Chairperson and members of the committee, I move on to public employment programs and the EPWP in particular. 900,234 opportunities were created during the 2017-18 financial year, in which 10 billion worth of wages were paid out. 35.7% of these opportunities were created by public bodies at the national level, 41% by public bodies at the provincial level, and 22.8% at the municipal level. 372 youth were provided with opportunities to become artisans through the Manufacturing, Engineering and Service-Related Sector Education and Training Authority. 5,948 youth were capacitated on financial and consumer-related matters in partnership with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. With the National Youth Service Programs as a conduit, participants were also accredited with training and workplace experience on construction projects implemented by the Department of Public Works itself. 626,526 households received waste management services through EPWP, and 1.4 million service beneficiaries received either home community-based care or received at least home community-based care. 322 SMEs, which includes cooperatives and non-profit organizations, were also supported through capacity building, and 50 youth were trained at the municipal level in the installation of set-top boxes. Chair, moving over from DPW to PMTE, and we talk about the National Real Estate Management Services, which is the first program in PMTE. The first program in PMTE. Chairperson, the goal. Thank you.
Make it easy. I'm told the public works is in the making.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, real estate investment services, the first core business program within PMT, whose goal is to increase the value of the portfolio by informing asset management decisions and measuring the performance of the portfolio to inform our strategies. During the year, the National Immovable Asset Management Framework, or NIAM framework, was developed as a tool to guide the implementation of the National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy. Initially, this will be rolled out at the national and provincial levels and thereafter move to the other sectors. And this is intended to standardize maintenance and improve life cycle maintenance. In the long run, we will also have better quality buildings and also reduce costs in this regard. A spatial framework was also developed to spatially target cities and towns in urban and rural areas to ensure effective use of state funding in the development of precincts to address the challenges of access to public services. The framework embodies a criteria matrix which was used to select 20 large cities and 14 large rural service centers and 37 service towns. The service towns are situated in the 27 poorest district municipalities as defined by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Chairperson, part of the 70 projects at various phases of planning include dark service installations at the Selva Kop to accommodate 4 more head offices for the government printing works, the redevelopment of the old H.D. De Witt state-owned site in Johannesburg, the state-owned Smith Street site will accommodate 4 national departments, and precincts are being planned to accommodate the department's regional offices and other social client departments in Polokwane. There are developments in Carolina as well as in Harwick, where the first phase of the development of the social cluster precinct is at an advanced stage, and site enablement is currently underway. Moving over to facilities management, Chairperson, I don't think it will be remiss of me to remind everybody that this is the area, facilities management, where there are huge funding gaps, and a funding gap that prevents a sustained planned maintenance program by the department. In this regard, Chairperson, the green program is also part of our facilities management function, and the green building program continues to support the Department of Environmental Affairs by contributing to the realization of nationally determined contributions in line with our commitment to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. With respect to condition assessments, these were completed across 15 priority facilities to inform the scope and budget of a total facilities management program for specific facilities. The total facilities management program is an important initiative in terms of the approach that the department intends undertaking to deal with maintenance of buildings. We also have the integration to telemetry devices that is now underway, and this will facilitate machine-to-machine communication and reporting, thus facilitating better monitoring and response to calls. So this is an important initiative together with business process revision within this particular area that is being standardized across all the regions to ensure a uniform approach to maintenance operations work rather than the current fragmented approach that we are using to deal with maintenance. One of the areas that is also of concern to our chairperson is occupational health and safety, where there are high levels of compliance risk that continues to bog us down and cause serious concern. During the year, we conducted 1,062 inspections across buildings for statutory compliance. 912 construction sites were also inspected, and there were 20 inspections of active and spiked railway sidings. Chairperson, during the year under review, our asset register program, which is also at the heart of what the PMT does, made significant progress in the quality of its asset register, as well as a reduction of audit outcomes. And further, Chairperson, the PMTE is working furiously to develop a new funding model and in consultation with National Treasury to conclude on a revised tariff structure. What is clear, we have a chronic underfunding issue within the PMTE where budgets would devolve to client departments, and these are clearly not sufficient to maintain the kind of buildings that we want people to visit and receive public services from. But quite clearly, the PMTE is on a trajectory to improve the quality of its service as well as the condition of its portfolio moving forward. In concluding this particular area, Chairperson, with respect to infrastructure projects completed, we have the Port Elizabeth Court upgrades, repairs and renovations in Seki Magistrates Court, new home affairs accommodation in Fluswe, as well as police stations in a number of areas, including Capricorn District Municipality, Limpopo, Battlesdorp in Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality, as well as Dube Mabopane in the city of Shawnee Metro. Chairperson, at this point, I hand over to my colleague. The next stage of the presentation is to deal with the reflection of our annual performance plan on an indicator and indicator by indicator basis. So we'll deal with the program performance information and extent to which we've met our targets before we take you through the financial information. Let me then hand over to my colleague Luazi Matlango.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, DDG. Good morning, honorable members. I'll take you through the indicators for the APP and also how we've reflected them in the achievements in the annual report. As the DDG has already said, given the highlights, so what I'm giving now and what I'm presenting basically now is the breakdown of those indicators that then feed to those highlights, the achievements and the outcomes basically, and which ones we've achieved, the way we have underperformed, and then the reasons thereof, and also what actions we've taken to actually address those issues. Chair, basically now starting with the main vote, which is Section A of Chapter 2 of the Annual Report, is the main vote performance information. Now it starts with the vision of the department, convenient access to dignified public service, which is the broader vision, and then it's supported by that mission statement and internally with the realization and also upholding those values within the department. We basically call them the impact, innovation, integrity, motivation, professionalism, accountability, results-oriented, as well as working together as part of the teamwork approach. Now, the main vote is supported by this organogram, with these DDGs and the programs. The earlier slides that show the program structure of the department and then from the main vote, is these are the programs that are supported from the Program 1 administration, where largely it's shared services, finance, supply chain, governance, and also Office of the DG and the Office of Ministry. And then the Program 2, supported by by intergovernmental coordination, Program 3, expanded public works program, Program 4, the policy branch, and then Program 5, which is through the prestige program. And then each of these programs has the purpose and basically the realization of those objectives and the reason why each program exists, leading to the achievement of those highlights that the DDG alluded to. Now, in terms of the program structure, starting with Program 1, administration, now looking at the KPIs, the key performance indicators, starting with administration, DDG talked about the management performance assessment tool. Now, at the time of compiling the indicator, this index was compiled with 140 standards under those four key performance areas with 17 management practices, which then talk about the internal controls and compliance to regulations. And at the time, the target was based on 140, but when the standards were released, administered by the Department of Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation, it had actually reduced the standards from 140 to 88 standards, which then affected the calculation of it. So what it means basically is that when you look at the target and what we've achieved, technically, it's an improvement, but technically it shows that decline. But when you look at the differences in terms of the standards and the reduction in the standards, it then shows that kind of improvement. So with a target of 3.8, then we achieved 2.9. How it works, the minimum is 1, and then the maximum is an index of 4. And then when you look at the score of 2.9, it's 2.9 of 4, which we are basically moving towards that, supported by the compliance for moving from 25% to 70%, and eventually looking at a compliance of 100% in the last MPET cycle. Fraud and awareness is basically 24 out of 24 investigations were initiated within 30 days and were reported against the target of 100%, so it was 100% achievement in this target. 6 interventions recommended for mitigation of fraud risk within the department was realized during the financial year. In terms of finance, we're sitting at 11% irregular expenditure. The target was 80% reduction in this irregular expenditure baseline, and then this also relates to some investigation as far back as 2008-2009, so it's quite a daunting exercise, but then towards realizing this moved against the baseline achievement of about 11%. And then when we go to the financials, there will be a breakdown of this irregular expenditure to give information around the investing in the irregular expenditure. Compliant invoices settled within 30 days. The target of compliance is sitting at 100%, the target, and we're sitting for the financial main vote. We're sitting main vote department. We're sitting at 93% compliance to this. And then also, it's also issues of dealing with errors, incomplete information, working with the suppliers to try and get the relevant information, as well as also to effect payments within the prescribed period. And then in terms of bids, it's 14 bids out of 26 bids, which represents 56%, were awarded within the 56 days of tender advertisement closed. And then in terms of quotations, 273 quotations out of 318 were awarded within 30 days, representing 86% of the quotations awarded. Now these are basically demand-driven indicators, basically. So based on the quantum received, try to respond as quickly as possible, try to have the percentages achievement. And then from an HR perspective, which is human resource, the requirement is to fill posts from advertisement within 6 months, and then 82 adverts went out, which contained 109 positions within the 82 adverts, and all of them were filled within 6 months, constituting the 100% within 6 months. And then from a PMTE, there were modules to support PMTE. modules to support the operationalization of PMTE, and then due to the delays and also the user requirements, just to the user requirements to align to the operationalization of PMTE with the broader demands of PMTE, still in line with the functions of the PMTE, the modules are still underway, so have not yet been concluded to actually give effect to the functioning. So that's running concurrently, the modules user requirements, as well as the process of operationalizing PMTE. And then there's the enterprise resource planning across the sector, which is the department, provinces, and then there's the concurrent function with the DGG alluded to, and talk about the concurrent function is also to try and see a seamless approach between the national as well as provincial to look at how we plan accordingly and how we also plan with the resources, limited resources, and how we achieve the best out of it. And this process is to run through the IT system as well as advancing and assisting the provinces and the national department to work together. So that process is still underway to finalize this process. And then in terms of cases of fraud and corruption, DG talked a lot in detail about the fraud cases. 100% were reported, cases subject to disciplinary processes, as well as default judgments. Of all the default judgments received, all of them were compensated, 100% achievements as well. Program 2 is the intergovernmental program. Now that's a program that basically deals with the coordination aspect between the national internal department, national and provinces as part of the concurrence. So we signed performance review reports for 2017 of the sector, which then I exchanged at the various structures of the INMET, which the DDG also talked about, from the CFO forum, the GIAMA tech, as well as national and provincial forums on performance. So two performance reviews were done, two of two, which then amount to 100% achievement. And then 12 agreements were signed out of the target of 20 agreements for major policies delivered between provinces and municipalities. Now the reason for this underachievement is that the engagement with the provinces was that now the three spheres, the national, provincial and municipalities, that the provinces felt that they would then engage with the municipalities to actually assist in some of the frameworks, and that then resulted in underachievement of this target, because now the provinces felt there was no need for the national to actually engage with the municipalities, because provinces will then engage with the municipalities, and then that result affected the performance. Surveys were then conducted, two of the surveys within the sector as well, to look at the best methods of concurrent function and how we can actually work together the those three spheres of government. So two of two amounted to 100%, surveys were conducted. Then in terms of policy frameworks were developed, there's a framework on two of two, 100% that we achieved. Now there's an additional framework that was then developed. So the framework is the asset register framework, the maintenance framework, as well as the OSHA framework, occupational health and safety. Minister alluded to that effect as well on the occupational health and safety, where you talk about all across the spheres of government and the safety of those buildings for effective productivity as well as safety of occupants. And then in terms of the intercoordination, there's also the skills pipeline aspect of it in terms of the beneficiaries that through the DPW programs, there were beneficiaries, and then they broken down in these internships, the assistants, the learnerships, the skills program, youth professionals, management trainers, trainees, better holders, school programs, Cuban technical advisors, trade test obtained 123 bursary holders completed and qualifications young professionals. These are the beneficiaries of the DPW programs within the skills pipeline or the skills development program in the department. The target was 1,025. We achieved about 1,680, and then that's the breakdown of all those categories and the numbers that speak to this. The program 3 is the expanded public works program. 934 work opportunities were reported against the target of 1.4 million. The earlier on, the DDG, when was given the highlights, talked about of this total number, 30%, 31% was reported provincial, at national, 41 at provincial, and around 22%, 23% was around the municipalities. That already shows the technical aspect of it, the lack of capacity, the technical capacity to actually report. Then that affects the the reporting, delays in the reporting system on the EPWP system, as well as also the under-reporting. So this is largely under-reporting as a result of those technical issues relating to the reporting of work opportunities by public bodies across the system. Designated groups broken down into three: women, youth, and persons with disabilities. 43.8 against the target of 55 for youth, and 66.5 against the women, and 1.3 against a target of 2% for persons with disabilities. And of average all those three, so it is some improvement when you compare to the previous financial year when you look at designated group participating in the EPWP program. Two data quality reports to actually effect decisions around work opportunities were created, two of 200%, and then 354 contracted non-profit organizations supported out of a total of 350 in zone of achievement, and then 297 public bodies provided with technical support, which is also part of the addressing the issues of under-reporting and the technical capacity required to reach the targets of work opportunities. 297 of public bodies out of 290 were. Now, in terms of the sector frameworks, convergence were not approved as yet. However, the frameworks have been developed, pending approval, and will be implemented in the current financial year. In terms of policy, which is Program 4, main vote, policy discussion, the DDG alluded to the issue of the white paper, where there were some challenges with the capacity, and then there was a refocus of insourcing capacity in the department, and then that also resulted in that period we lost time in the period of from capacity then thinking of the re-insourcing. There was a two-year lag in terms of that, and then that also affected the overall target of the five-year. So now it's underway to actually look at this. And then in terms of CIDB and CBE Amendment X, there were quite extensive consultations with the various stakeholders, and these were achieved. And Chair and Honourable Members, I think in the past this has always been a question on Program 4, that yes, there may not have been any qualifications or any adverse opinions because the targets were not achieved. I think we are happy to report that in this financial year, the targets, three of them, two have been achieved, so 67%, so there is some improvement in terms of the target and there's some progress when it comes to this program. The last program, Program 5, which is Prestige. There are no prestige policies developed, that's still underway. That at the time of reporting, they were not yet provided to it. So this basically talk about the accommodation to the office bearers, talk about the OSHA as well, in the office of the office bearers, as well as standards and norms, standards and norms when you come to the prestige environment. And these are underway and pending finalization as well as approval and then implementation thereof. In terms of mechanical breakdown and emergency breakdown and provincial furniture and provision of furniture, there were some challenges between in these areas. I think when you come to the issues of the audit findings, and I'll explain in detail so some of the contributing factors to that and then how we are actually addressing those areas. So there were challenges with that, and from the audit perspective, there were some adverse findings around that issue, purely on the basis of the availability of the evidence to support what has been done. Work has been done, however, to support it, there were some challenges within the department and working together with other stakeholders to actually look into that. Now, when we look at the audit outcomes of the DPW main vote on slide 27, three of five programs were actually audited: Program 3 EPWP, Program 4 Policy, and Program 5 Prestige. Now, Program 3 was when you compare 2016 2017 and 2017 and 2018, it was a disclaimer EPWP in the last financial year, disclaimer, and then this financial year is a qualification which then shows an improvement in the audit outcome. And when we presented to the audit committee in the last year in October, we presented the audit action plan, and then these are some of the controls put in place to try and assist the department to improve the audit. Construction, it was unqualified at zero level of performance, and now it's unqualified at 67th level of performance, which also shows the importance and also the effectiveness of those controls within the program itself. So it has remained unchanged in terms of the audit findings, but it has improved, there's improvement in terms of level of performance. prestige. The true financial is the disclaimer, which has been expressed by the Auditor General as well. And this was a result of poor governance structures as well as lack of evidence to support what has been achieved. And this now there's a program of action to implement how we can pay, how to deal with the issues of prestige. Now, the second aspect, the second performance level, according to the APP, as well as the reported achievement in the annual report, is the PMTE aspect of it. Again, with the same vision mission, values still the impact values, won't go into that. And then the program structure, CTG highlighted to this. And then the structure is basically the six programs of the PMTE, administration, program two, real estate investment services, program three, construction project management, program four, real estate management services, program five, real estate and asset register, real estate information and registry, and then program six is facilities management. So I'll also go into those KPIs per program and also link the individual activities per KPI in terms of the performance measures and how it relates to the highlights that were given earlier on by the DTG. Now again, within the space, there's also compliant invoices settled within 30 days within PMTE. And then there were no newly identified revenue sources incubated in the department. The minister raised the issue of operationalization of PMTE, and also DDG touched on it. There's an OYF program called OFSP, Operationalization and Financial Sustainability Program. And that is taking charge in terms of identifying sources of revenue for the department, and that process is underway to identify sources of revenue to sustain the PMTE. Bids and quotations, I think 16% in terms of our bid awards, 29 of 182, as well as 73% of quotations awarded within 30 days. Now, these were some of the challenges regarding the issues around the delays as well as dealing with the responses from the stakeholders. Now, program two, real estate investment services. We basically work with the client departments, 42 user asset management plans, which basically form part of the needs of the clients. And then we work them out into a custodian asset management plan, which then informs decisions on how we then roll out the function of public works when we deal with the client. Now, 42 user departments have already produced a user asset management plan and we received, so that's 100% achievement standard across the board. And then within those, there were wait lists that should have been, that would be supported in terms of the infrastructure that should be signed off by the user department sign. So there's 9 out of 10 that we signed, 90%. Still challenges with the Department of Correctional Services, so their engagements with that one. One of the challenges is basically the confirmation of budget by user departments, but the late confirmation of budget may also affect the signing of this. And then the precinct, which the DTG alluded to, basically 3 of 3 that were identified, 100%. Government precinct development plans aligned to the identified municipal, rural, and urban integrated development plans we have achieved, as well as sites, as well as completed concepts have been completed for identified user departments. The feasibility studies were also completed within a time frame. There's a time frame that is done. That is, so 230 out of 280 feasibility studies were concluded. The target was 85. We achieved 78%. Now, evaluations completed within scheduled time frames, a target of 85, overachieved, so that's 397 of 296, which constitutes 134% of evaluations. Disposal request processed, now the demand driven as well based on the request coming for, 97 of 170, 57% were processed, and that were against the target of 85%. I alluded to the UMs, the 42 or 42 UMs, then that then translates into the CMs, the custodian asset management, compiling that and and that is also a regulation according to GIAMA, and then it's also submitted to National Treasury, which then contains all the infrastructure needs that I see, as well as looking at the building performances, and 703 buildings were identified and also assessed in terms of the level of performance. Program 3 is the construction department, construction project management chair. Now, the objective basically is to develop detailed construction plans that direct the execution of the construction. So when you look at the KPIs, the indicators themselves, we had, in terms of the approved designs, we had 81 designs approved, infrastructure project designs against the target of 2016. Now, there was a moratorium internally in the department on the capital budget as a result. That affected the projects from graduating. There are a number of stages where then you would find projects graduating from one stage to another stage. And the moratorium then caused a delay affecting the graduation of those projects into the next stage. In terms of projects ready for tender, 79 of 174, same again, the failure to graduate to other to other stages in the department. Delays on client approvals for awarding of projects, procurement strategies were approved, but tender processes could not be concluded due to lack of funds, and that then affected the performance level, performance measure on infrastructure projects. Now, in terms of infrastructure sites handed over for construction, 98 of 117, and alluded earlier on that there's still issues of funding issues of confirmation of budget from the Department of Correctional Services as one example, and also major clients such as the Department of Justice Correctional Services confirmed budget allocation date. So at the time of constructing the indicator, you then have this two portfolio. But then the confirmation of the budgets, when it comes to the implementation, if one is confirmed late against what was set as a target, then it affects the implementation and then it pulls down the actual achievement of the target. However, there are some engagements with the client departments to actually look and find some synergies in terms of budget allocation and implementation and working together in terms of implementation of these projects. Now, when you come to the efficiency indicators. Now we're looking at infrastructure projects completed within a clear period of time, as well as also infrastructure completed within a clear budget. So in terms of within a clear time, there are 138 out of 85 dozen over achievements as a result of improved governance and oversight and working with the regions to improve that coordination of infrastructure. And that allowed some of the projects to graduate into various stages, and then allowing the achievement of this of this target, same as the projects within agreed budget, as well as accessing the value for money for these projects and staying within the agreed budget. And then in terms of work opportunities, now embedded in the infrastructure projects and also is basically to create work opportunities. Now of the target of 11,250, only 5,732 were realized or achieved with opportunities in the financial year. So there were still challenges linked to the process of the EPWP under reporting and the challenges in technical aspects of it that then also affected the reporting of the and also the nature of construction as well. Then finally, at the time of reporting, we still have these elements to also deal with.
Your voice must not disappear. You have a good voice, but you're not making use of it. You're causing us to sleep. It's not good when you have such a voice, a golden voice. Use it to keep us awake.
Thank you, Chair. I'll stay closer to the mic now. Right. The last indicator on projects is the reduction in backlogs, there's a target of 75%, and there were 100% of all the identified areas where there were backlogs, and they were actually reduced, and then that also improved the nature of the performance measure. The next program, Chair, moving with speed now, is the real estate, which is program 4 of the PMTE, is the real estate management services. Now, the first indicator, basically, this is to provide functional leased accommodation for clients, as well as to increase the revenue through rentals. And you'll see that the breakdown of the indicators or the indicators themselves, they feed into these objectives. Now, at the time of reporting, there were no leases signed within the prescribed period. Now, this is basically saying within a prescribed period, and this is leases which needed to be concluded within a specific time frame. And then now, at the time of reporting, they were not concluded, were not signed within the time frame. However, we report that at the end of the financial year, outside the time frame, 6 lease agreements were concluded, 19 sitting at the bid adjudication as national and 2 at the regional adjudication, then totaling about 27 lease agreements that were signed at the end of the financial year. However, still a challenge in terms of the controls within the time frame, but the 27 were actually done, achieved with them. Now, in terms of the savings realized against the target of 100 million within the identified leases, there's 12.1 million savings realized against the target of 100. I think this is also issues of delays because the negotiation started late in October 2017 of the 102 leases which were being concluded, and client approvals are waiting the negotiation on these leases. And so that's a long process of concluding on these leases. And then in terms of the transformational agenda, 67% against the target of 22 that were awarded to black-owned companies when it comes to the leasing environment, as well as the revenue increase in letting out of state-owned properties, the target of 20, and then the achievement of 30% on the revenue generated with them. And then in terms of identifying vacant surplus state-owned properties to let out, the target was 60. We achieved 20% of that target. And then the last one, in support of the Operation Pakistan, Chair, we raised this issue that in supporting this one would be based on the request that will come from the department, and then we respond to this one to support the Operation Pakistan. For the financial year and the 31st March, there were no requests received from the Department of Agriculture and Forest and Fisheries. There were no requests for this, therefore we could not achieve this target because we respond on the request for this target. The second last program of the PMTE is Program 5, Real Estate Information and Registry. The target for real estate basically is on disposal, approved process, and then process for transfer. The target was 70. We achieved 50%. The process is still underway on the identified. It's also a process-driven approach where quite a number of factors need to be considered, and then that is still underway, and only 50% was achieved. Immovable asset updated on the immovable asset register, 100% target achieved. And then in terms of land parcels vested, it's 572 of the 800 land parcels are vested as an underperformance. One of the challenges or one of the reasons raised was that this is a collaboration between the department and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform on the use of a system. There's a system called LAW. It's a legal administration web-based system. There were technical glitches on the system that then resulted in the delay in the finalization of this, then affecting the performance level of this of the target. In terms of assessment of compliance of immovable at the provincial level, working with the provinces, 9 of 9 provinces were all assessed, and then that's 100% achievement, as well as immovable asset registers incorporated into a single repository, 2 of 2 were done, and that also resulted in 100% of the achievement of this target. Then the last program of PMTE, Program 6 Facilities Management, also, the objective is to deal with the issues of maintenance program in accordance with the approved plan, and also we have programs of efficient resources. And the target basically was on ensuring that all buildings or facilities have contracts in place for maintaining those buildings. A target of 450 was identified as also part of what DTG raised earlier on as part of the highlight on the prioritization of some buildings as well as condition assessment. 450 were identified. We had achieved a total of 742 of those building facilities with maintenance contracts in place. Then also those that get reported on the system to effect any for any level of maintenance that is required in particular buildings, number of categories, and then we had 5% achievement against the target of unscheduled reported maintenance incidences. There is also an issue regarding the system. So there's a transition from the old system into a new system called Archibus, and then also there's a lot of data cleaning moving from Works for You to Archibus system. So there's a lot of data cleaning to ensure that what then moves from the old system, we're moving with information that will inform proper decision making. So that also affected the reporting of this. And then in terms of the transformational agenda, 65% term contracts were awarded to black-owned companies within the facilities management area against a target of 30%. Then the renewables, we've got a reduction in energy consumption, which then contributes to the savings in energy and measured in kilowatts. Against a target of 300 million, we achieved 61 million reduction. So there's still challenges within the kilowatts, the energy issues. Now, there's a funding module that is being discussed as well as a strategy on how to roll out this program, working together with National Treasury, GTEF, as well as the DBSA, Development Bank of Southern Africa, to actually find ways of rolling out this program. In terms of the renewable energies, same approach as well, but working together with GTEC and DBSA to basically deal with the renewable energies linked to also the condition assessment of the buildings on how you would deal with this, which also includes issues such as solar panels as well as for generation of energy. Then the last target share is the reduction in water consumption, which we achieved the target of 4.8, and then the target of 4.8 million kiloliters, and then we achieved 10.5 million kiloliters reduction in water as part of the Save the Water campaign, as well as the addressing the issues of the water crisis in the country as well. Now, in terms of the audit outcomes, of the six programs of the PMTE, four programs were audited. Program 2, Real Estate Investment Services. Program 3, Construction Project Management. Program 4, Real Estate Information and Registry. Program 5, Real Estate Information and Registry. And Program 6, Facilities Management. Now, in terms of the comparison between the two financial years and when you look at the audit findings, Program 2 was the first time being audited, so therefore it's not applicable in terms of the analysis comparing with last year because it was not audited. It was only this year, and it received an unqualified audit or audit opinion. And then Program 3, we moved from a disclaimer in 2016-17 to a qualification, which also shows the improvement in governance structures and implementation of controls to improve that, as we raised last year on the audit action plan on how we're going to address these matters. And then Program 5 qualification to an unqualified, which is also an improvement. And then Program 6 is from a disclaimer to a qualification, which is also facilities. 2 years running on disclaimer, then this financial year or the past financial year is now sitting on a qualification. So these were effective reviews conducted to ensure consistency in the reporting and ensuring that evidence is available to support what has been reported, hence this improvement in the reporting. However, for the Program 4, there was a regression in the Program 4 Real Estate Capacity, Real Estate Management Services, which was qualified in the previous financial year, and then now is at a disclaimer. One of the main contributing factor, this was basically the issue of, it's a technical environment, there's issues of capacity, so the department is still facing capacity within this area, and then align that with the changes in the management as well. That also affected the reporting on this. However, there's a plan of action to address these matters, to stabilize the program, as well as ensuring that the indicators are achieved, or performance is achieved within the space with the relevant. As the Minister was saying, in the Office of the Head of PMTE, PMO, there's capacity within the built environment, and this will be assisting a great deal to actually achieve this target. Now, the program on audit action plan, these were the findings in the previous financial year, which were also presented to the committee, that on performance information, predetermined objectives, there were inconsistencies noted in the annual report and what was actually reported, as well as from the annual performance plan.
We are happy to report that these waves have been cleared. There are no inconsistencies, and of all the programs that we implemented in the last financial year, no inconsistencies were reported. Same as not all targets were included in the APP. When you go back to the APP of the previous financial year, the indicator related to EPWP, it was included in the financial, and the audit outcome was also a positive one, where it moved from a qualification to an unqualified audit. Same as PMTE, all programs, there were no inconsistencies, and there was an improvement except regression in terms of program 4. And then the main one, which was an audit finding in program 5 on the asset register. In the previous financial year, there were 5 findings that were raised by AG on municipal valuation role, Lightstone municipal valuation role value, as well as comparable sale value, replacement cost, as well as valuation assets under construction. Now, there were significant findings from AG in the previous financial year. Now, we're also happy to report to the audit committee that, to the portfolio committee, that of the 5, 4 of them have been addressed, and there are no findings raised by AG, with the exception of replacement cost, and that relates to a method of calculation when we deal with the assets, particularly the aspect of the extent within the size, then that affects the replacement, the calculation of the cost. Now, when we look at the journey of the audit opinion, audit chair and honorable members, we see that from the DPWR side, from 2013 all the way to 2017-18, we see that we're moving from a disclaimer, adverse qualification, unqualified and clean. We started off with the qualification in 2013, and since 2014 right through to this to the last financial year, we've been sitting on unqualified audit opinion, and that shows an improvement or sustaining that level of performance and moving towards a clean audit. From the PMT side, we moved from 2013, a disclaimer, and then 2014 to 2016, we stayed at a qualified audit opinion, regressed in 2017 to an adverse, which also relate to the previous slide on the replacement cost, and then now that has been dealt with, addressed some of the major findings, and we're happy to say to the audit committee, we're now sitting on the PMT side on a qualified audit opinion. Overall assessment, this shows an improvement in the audit towards the objective of a clean audit, as Minister alluded earlier on. And these are the specifics of individual areas over time where there has been some improvement from financials to non-financials predetermined objectives, 2014 main vote. And then the next slide shows the historical audit outcomes of the PMTE from financials to compliance aspect and performance. And then we see that there's over time, there's an improvement in all these categories of the audit. And then the major one that we talked about in the next slide is the immovable assets, where we talked about the deemed cost, the extent and the size that resulted in the findings, particularly around the issue of the... and then these are some of the interventions, review of the GIS drawings to try and deal with these issues of extent and also to address these matters, and that is processes underway to improving the audit around the... Then the last section before the financials chair quickly, and then is the issues around the human resource management. We've looked at a few tables to reflect on this. The employment and vacancy by program, DPW5 programs, number of posts, that's the available number of posts is 1,220, but the number of posts filled is 820, and then the vacancy rate is 27%. And then additionally to the establishment is 208 posts. For PMTE, number of posts is 7,592, number of posts filled 4,750, vacancy rate 37%, and then additional to the establishment is 734. And then again, personnel expenditure by programs, DPW from administration all the way to prestige, the total of the department is 6.9 billion, and then when you look at the compensation of employees as a percentage of total expenditure is 6.4%. And then for PMTE, 14 billion, we're looking at 11% compensation of employees as a total of expenditure. In terms of compliance, these are basically the compliance stats, the employment equity stats,
50% target for employment equity on SMS level. Males is still sitting at 65.1 and females sitting at 34.8 for main vote. And then in terms of people with disabilities, a target of 2%, and then we're sitting at 0.5% as at 31st March 2018. And for PMTE, same again. For 50% target, males, 59%. Males is 59%, and females is 41%. And people with disabilities sitting at 1.28% against the target of 2%. How we are addressing these issues? We do recognize that at SMS level, there's still a challenge, and the recruitment of women at SMS level is still lacky, and then there's a plans in place to address this as part of the future plans to address these challenges in the department. And these basically are some of the challenges we've raised that affect the human resource, and then how the future plans or how we are in looking at addressing these issues. From the from deactivating unfunded posts on PESAL, up until we also look at recruiting people with disabilities in areas in the department and give management time frames to basically deal with this so that we then able to achieve those targets. Thank you, Chair. And then the next sections will be the financial sections.
Thank you very much. We're handing over to the finance people.
The TPW Finance.
Thank you. I will be presenting the financials for DPW. Under DPW in slide 53, I will be presenting the environment, shifting of funds, appropriation statement for both programs, expenditure and economic classification, financial performance, financial position, notes to the financial statement, specifically unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful, commitments, accruals, and contingent liabilities. Moving to slide number 54. Slide number 54 and 55 shows the movement of funds from the adjusted appropriation to the final appropriation in terms of both shifting of funds and the environment. Now, in program one, you will see that under the current payments, the adjusted appropriation was 427 million. There was a shifting of funds between current payments and transfers, and the net is zero. And when you go to the environment, there is an increase of budget by 553,000, which results to the revised or the final appropriation to 527 million. And the environment in this program relates to services. Under transfers, budget was 6.5. There was an increase in terms of the shifting environment, and the revised budget is 7.4. Under machinery and under payments for capital assets, that is machinery, the budget was 9.4, increased by 2 million. The revised budget is 11 million. You also have the spending under the payments for financial assets by 1.9 million. Program 2, we only have the shifting of funds, we don't have the environment. So the budget remains the same, as the net will be zero. Program 3, the expanded program, under the current payment, the budget was 308, the adjusted budget was 308 million. There was a shifting of 558,000. The environment is an outflow, resulting in the revised budget 303 million. Transfers and subsidies, this includes the incentives for EPWP. It was reduced by 114,000. Now the final budget is 2096,567. Payments for capital assets, that's your machinery, it was decreased by 338 from 2.6 to 2.3 million. Payments for financial assets, that's the write-offs, 158,000 as environment, as a shifting of funds. On slide 55, in program 4, we don't have the environment. It means the budget remains the same, because what does been applied is only the shifting of funds. Prestige, the current payments, the adjusted budget 69 million, increased by 1.7, 71 million final budget. Transfers, there is no environment, there is no shifting of funds, budget remain the same. Payments for capital assets, 5 million, environment outflow of 1.5 million, the revised budget 3.4 million. When you go to slide 56, it shows the movement between the programs. On your left-hand side, it shows from which program to which program. So as explained, I will not be going through this. It supports slide number 54 and 55. In terms of the appropriation statement, this will be a revised budget from slide 54 and 55, including the expenditure, so that you can be able to see the performance per program. Now, for program one, the expenditure is 100%. All the economic classification is spent fully. Program two, with a budget of 48 million, the spending is at the end of the financial is 94, with 2.8 million being underspent. Current payment, 39 million, expenditure, 37 million, 2.2 million underspent. Transfers and subsidies, 5 million, 4.9 spent, 171,000 underspent, equivalent to 97%. Payments for capital assets, that's machinery, 725,000 budget, 335 spent, expenditure equivalent to 46%. Slide number 58, expanded public works. The total budget is 2.4 billion, 2.367 billion spent, 35 underspent, equivalent to 98.5 expenditure. Under the current payments, 303 million, 267 expenditure, 35 million underspent, the total spending is 87%. Transfers and subsidy, 2 billion budget, 100% spent. Payments for financial assets, payments for capital assets, 2.2 million, 1.6 million spent, expenditure equivalent to 73%. Program 4, 4 billion budget, this is where the bulk of the transfers for each department is sitting. 3.986 billion spent, 14 million underspent, the total expenditure is equivalent to 99.6%. The current payments, that's the area where there is an underspending. You have the budget of 31 million, 17 million spent, 14 underspent, the expenditure is equivalent to 53%. Prestige Program 5, the total budget 84.8 million budget, 79 million spent, 5.1 underspent, the total expenditure is equivalent to 94%. In terms of the economy classification, current payments, budget 71 million, 66 spent, 5 million underspent, equivalent to 92.9%. Transfers and subsidy, 10 million, 98%, the expenditure 10 million. Payments for capital assets, 3.4. Expenditure 3.4, 100% spent. Overall, expenditure for the department with a budget of 6.985 billion, 6.927 spent, with 58 million underspending, equivalent to 99.2 expenditure. Now, in terms of the programs, on slide number 59, it explains the variances for the areas of underspend. In program two, the expenditure variance of 6% relates to compensation of employees and goods and services. Program three, under EPWP, the underspending of 35 million relates to goods and services. Program four, the underspending of 15 million relates to compensation of employees and goods and services. The reasons for underspending are listed in the motivation. Program 5, prestige policy, underspending of 5 million, equivalent to 6% rates to goods and services. Now, if we move to slide number 60. Now, this is the economy classification summarized for all the programs. Now, the budget is still the same, 6.95 billion. The expenditure is still the same, 6.927. 58 million underspending, equivalent to 98.2. Now, in terms of the economic classifications, we had a budget of 457 million for compensation of employees. 444 was spent and underspent related to 12 million. The actual expenditure is 97.3%. Goods and services, the budget 413,369,000 spent, 43.7 million underspent. And as explaining in slide number 59, the underspending relate to EPWP, intergovernmental, and prestige. The spending for goods and services is 89.4. Interest 100% spent 1.8 million. Under the transfers, provinces and municipalities, this is EPWP transfers to provinces and municipalities, 1.4 billion budget, 1.4 expenditure, 100%. Departmental agencies and accounts, these are transferred to the entities, the PMTE, CIDB, CBE, and ACRIMA. With a budget of 3.8 billion spent, 100% expenditure. Foreign government and international organization, this is a transfer to Commonwealth, 22 million, 100% expenditure. Public corporation and private entities, 111 million, budget 111 million expenditure. The expenditure relates to IDT. Non-profit institutions, 624, budget 624, expenditure 100% spent. The non-profit institution budget relates to EPWP for the non-state sector. Household, 13.9 million budget, 13.5, expenditure equivalent to 97.6. Payments for capital assets, for machinery and equipment, 17.9 budget, 16.7, 1.1 underspending, expenditure equivalent to 93.5%. Comparing the two financial years, 17 and 18, there is an improvement because at the end of 16-17, the total spending was 98.3, and at the end of 17-18, the expenditure is 98.2%. Now, slide number 61, I will not be going through because it's the same as slide number 59, but this one consolidates all the economic classification per program. So it will indicate under compensation of employees the programs that underspend, goods and services the same, and the reasons for underspending. Transfers and subsidies, the underspending relating to what and for which programs, the same as payments for capital assets. Now, slide number two, this slide relates to the goods and services. If you look at goods and services budget in slide number 60, goods and services budget is 413, and this slide shows where the bulk of the expenditure is in the department. It's 178 million and it relates to business advisory, infrastructure planning, legal service, contractors, and outsourced services. And these are the services rendered for EPWP, ICT, and Prestige. Now, in terms of the trend, you will also realize that between 2017-18 and 2016, there is a decrease in terms of the expenditure. As at the end of 2017-18, 178 million was spent against 189 which was spent in 2016-17. Then I will not be going through the variances in terms of the programs. Then I will go to slide number 64 for statement of the financial performance. Now, this is more of your income statement. Now, under the revenue, we have received budget of 6.985 against 6.5 billion. Now, the variance between the two, it's more of your increase in the budget and mainly under your transfers. The departmental revenue last year, we generated 10 million compared to 14 million generated in 2016-17, and the reasons are listed in slide number 65. Under the expenditure compensation of employees, in 2017-18 we spent 445 million compared to 438 million spent in 2016-17,
The variance between the two is mainly relating to the delay in the filling of the positions. Goods and services, in 2017-18, 369 spent against 366. Interest, we didn't have the expenditure under the interest in 2016-17, and we had it in 17-18. Transfers and subsidies, we spent 6 billion compared to 5.5. Now, this is a budget increase between the two financial years, because in all financial years, we fully transfer the budget that has been received from appropriation. Tangible assets, 16.7 million spent in 2017 compared to 19 million spent. And you, if you compare the two financial years, you also realize that the budget for tangible asset has decreased, hence the expenditure went down between the two financial years. For payment for financial assets, 5.2 spent in 17-18 compared to 1.399 spent in 2016-17. So these are the write-offs. The surplus that will be surrendered to National Treasury in the current financial year is 68 million compared to 124 million in 2016-17. And this linked to the performance that I indicated in slide number 2, where the expenditure has increased from 98.2 to 99.2% in 2017. Now, these are the notes, slide number 65 and 66 are the notes relating to the slide number 64. So I have explained the variances between the two, then I will not be going through. Slide number 67, statement of financial position. This is your balance sheet. Here we are comparing the two financial years to see the movement, whether there is an increase or decrease, and the reasons are provided in slide number 68. Under your current assets, you realize that relating to note number 9, 261 million reported as unauthorized, and is the same. Then it means we did not incur any unauthorized expenditure in 2017-18. In terms of the cash and cash equivalents, the movement is 1,000. It's almost the same. Prepayments, we have 14.8 million compared to 11 million in the previous financial year. The receivables, we reported 18 million in 2017-18 compared to 574 million in 2016. And the bulk of the receivables in 2016-17 were service that was rendered on behalf of the PMTE by the department. So it means in 2017-18, we have less services that have been recovered from the PMTE. Now, if you look at the receivables, it also linked to the bank draft under the liabilities. If you look at 2017-18, we had 277 million overdraft, compared to 753, because in 2016-17 we had to pay and recover later from the PMTE. Now, as we are not recovering the same as 2016, then it means this will also result in a reduction in the amount of the overdraft in the statement of financial performance. Now, I will not be going through the notes, then I will go to slide number 69. The slide number 69, it shows the unauthorized expenditure. As indicated, we don't have new unauthorized expenditure reported in the department. So, slide number 70 is the economic classifications and the period for unauthorized expenditure. Then I'll move to slide number 71. Slide number 71, I've already explained in terms of the movement why we have 277 compared to 753 that we had in 2016-17, because the bulk was relating to the receivables and mainly from the PMTE. Slide number 72, these are the notes in terms of the contingent liabilities. 2017, we reported 16.8 million compared to 2 million reported in 2016-17. Commitments, 128 million, which is a decrease compared to the previous financial year. 478. accruals 27 million, almost the same as in 2016, we reported 28 million. Payments not recognized, 23 million, almost the same as the previous financial year, 21 million. Employee benefits, 47 million, 46 in the previous financial year. Operating lease, there are no operating lease in 2017-18. We had 1.4 million in the previous financial year. Finance lease, 8.6 compared to 5.4 reported in the previous financial year. Irregular expenditure in slide number 73. You also realize that in 2017-18, there are no new cases of irregular expenditure being reported. At the end of 16-17, the closing balance for irregular expenditure was 151 million, and the closing balance at the end of 17-18 is 125. That it means there is a progress in resolving the irregular expenditure reported previously. Now, moving to slide number 74, it would be fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the same as irregular expenditure, we don't have new cases of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But we have the progress in resolving the existing fruitless and expenditure. The closing balance at the end of 16-17 was 2.7, and the closing balance at the end of 17-18 is 1.8. 1 million. Thank you.
I'm Mandla Stone. I'll be presenting the financial information for PMTE. I think it's very important for me to indicate that the PMTE reports the financial statement based on general recognized accounting practice, which requires us to do certain principles in terms of the disclosure. So it's not like the main vote, but I will unpack that as I go along. I think there were no changes in the accounting policy.
If you can be friendly to us, we want to hear you. Naturally, you are a gentleman. please make us hear you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. There are no changes in accounting policies, and also we had a transitional provision relating to the main transfer of functions from DPW to PMTE, which expired in 2016-17 financial year. The PMTE received a qualified audit opinion. I think that has been already mentioned. But I must say there was a lot of work that was done by the department without the service provider. And I must say that the engagement with AG was very robust and fruitful. There was no blood on the floor. So it's a collaboration between ourselves and AG, and there are certain recommendations that they've made which we are looking at as the department to improve the audit outcome. We also had a provision of the provision that we made for mainly day-to-day, which is about 2 billion. That's linked back to what I said earlier on about the CRAB standard, which requires us to disclose information in a particular way, even to estimate what cost the department will have incurred, which then at a later stage I will also explain what impact does it have on the financial statement of the PMTE. The bank overdraft that was reported is 2.3 billion, and I will also explain in my next slide what are the causes of this bank overdraft. The PMT also recorded the loss of 152 million. That was mainly due to the impairment that we had to provide, which is about 1 billion. I'll also go into details about that. I think I will spend a lot of time in this area, which is slide number 79. I think it is important for me to give background on this. When PMT was established in 2006, the methodology that was agreed with Treasury was that PMTE will pay service providers and claim from Glands Department later. As you all aware that all institutions of government must pay within 30 days, and in that first year of establishment of PMTE, we reported 866 million bank overdraft, which means PMTE, since it was established, it has been running on bank overdraft since it was established. That's because of the model that was agreed with National Treasury in 2006. So, which then brings the issue of going concern, which then AG has raised as an emphasis of matter. We continue to report the financial statement as a going concern entity. Reason being is that the main reason for bank overdraft is because client departments are owing. And if one will argue to say PMTE, they are uncertain about its going concern, maybe one must then say it means the government as a whole, one must question the going concern of government, because we are owed by government departments. It's not like private sector. So I thought, let me give that context to the member. But what we've done then as initiatives, we started a process where we then release payment policies on the first of each month, whereas previously we were paying landlords before time. So that has done a lot, because our bank overdraft on monthly basis has reduced to 342 million. It's more of delaying paying landlords than to pay them in line with this agreement. The other issue that is also causing the bank overdraft is your municipal services. The initiative that we are discussing with National Treasury is the possibility of claiming in advance for municipal services. However, this initiative may take longer than we expected, because there are a lot of engagements that we are having with National Treasury. Then also project, on average per month we are spending 645 million. And this is the area also that we are considering with National Treasury to say, is there any way that we can claim in advance based on the cash flow projections? But the other question that we may need to reflect on this one is to say, if you have the relationship between the landlord and the tenant, why you will have a budget given to the receipt for infrastructure? Because as a landlord, I should be the one controlling the budget. So these are the discussions that we are having with National Treasury to say, maybe it's high time that we need to review that principle, so that as a landlord, I control the budget for infrastructure, then I must charge the rental as like a norm in the sector. The other issue that is an initiative that we've taken is to also charge interest on all overdue accounts. What is interesting on this one, there is a client that we've threatened them with interest, and I met the CFO of that department 3 times in a week, because she's saying, no, we can't charge interest, it will reflect back on them. So these are the things that we are starting to, as an initiative, and the DG is busy signing the letters to all clients with an interest. The estimated interest that we've calculated is about 58 million per month on average. So it will then start to push clients to pay. But I must say, no matter what we can do as public works, we cannot necessarily press the button for clients to pay us. We can do everything, and unfortunately we cannot take any organ of state to court. Hence we are engaging Treasury, and maybe I may also request this committee at some point to summon certain clients after we've engaged those clients to say why they are not paying us, because they are also calling us in their portfolio committees where we are not doing our part, where we have to account to them. That's what is happening. So these are the initiatives that we put as public works, There are joint sessions with certain clients that we are having, especially our big clients. Treasury also is on board on this. We send information to them where they need to intervene. Then the other issue that we are trying to implement is operationalization and financial sustainability of PMT, which that program is mainly addressing the generation of revenue. But I must say this program, because claims department are our key stakeholder. If you look at our total portfolio of the asset register, 93% is occupied by claims department, which means the source of revenue is from the claims department. So it is then important that as we do this full cost recovery, claims must pay us. But we are mindful of the economic conditions of the country where claims are not receiving enough money that they require. We've attempted to do itemized billing with National Treasury with the hope that we'll get what we supposed to get. And just for four clients, there was a shortfall of 222 million where Treasury did not approve the rate that we wanted. So these are the challenges that we are facing, which is understandable. The country is not doing well in terms of economy. So it's something that is, if it increases over the years, then it can then change the financial situation of the country. One of the things that we are discussing with National Treasury also is to ring-fence all clients' accommodation, because some clients, when they come to account to Parliament, they will say Public Works is not claiming, which is not true. It's not to say as Public Works also we are doing everything correct. There are instances where also we are not doing our part, but there are engagement with clients like Defence is disputing about 800 million, and we are engaging Defence on a weekly basis. We are meeting with regions. Defence is on board, and so far we've cleared about 300 million as the department. Now will be engaging Defence. So those are the initiatives that we've taken, and once we are done with DOD, we'll move to SAPS to do the same thing, to where we clear all the disputes. But there are certain clients that are not saying anything. They don't respond. You send letters, you do everything, but they don't do anything. So one of the questions that maybe, which I've presented even at ESCO level, was to say at some point maybe we need to stop paying for municipal services so that clients will then get a feel to say how it feels. Because in principle, we don't have money to pay on behalf of these clients unless they pay us. That's the reality that we are facing. So on this slide, as I said, it's a very important slide. The PMT, as much as AG, has raised the issue to say there is a risk of going concern. I must say, from our side, it's not really a huge risk, because this money is owed by government departments, and all government departments, they get their appropriated funds every year. It's an issue of us engaging clients and try to push them to pay us. The next slide is basically summarizing in terms of our non-current assets, which is 126 billion. It then really basically confirmed that we have a good balance sheet of 126 billion. Even though if you look at your current liabilities against your current, if you look at your current assets against your current liabilities, it's more. And it's mainly contributed by an accounting entry, which I explained earlier on, to say we're on GRAP standards, which then requires us to also do certain accounting transactions, which in this case is a deferred revenue of about 6.7 billion. So if you look at the ratios, solvency ratio is 8 against 1, which shows that we have a good balance sheet. Liquidity ratio, including the deferred revenue, that's where I think we are not doing well, because we're supposed to be 1-to-1, but we are not there. It's 0.034 to 1, which is not good. which then is in line with what AG has raised to say there is a concern about going concern. Then the next slide is a statement of financial position where we are explaining the movements between 2017 financial year and 2018 financial year. Receivable from exchange, which is your debtors, which I've just explained to say it's mainly our client's department, it's 4.8 billion, whereas last year or previous year it was 4.7 billion. So there is a change of 2%, which is 93 million. The increase is mainly due to slow payments by service by client departments, which I've already explained. You have also operating lease assets, which went down by 18%. It's due to a straight lining adjustment. As I said, there's PMTE. There are certain accounting principles that we need to do just to comply with draft standards. Cash and cash equivalent, 5.9 million. Last year it was 2.9 million, which is 36% decrease. That one is as a result of increased deposits received in bank balance. So our total assets is 131 billion, whereas previous year it was, it's 131.9 billion, whereas previous year it was 131.1 billion. So the difference, the change there is just 1%. Then our current liabilities, the total current liabilities is 15 billion. You can see then the main line item there is your deferred revenue, which I've explained. But the total current liabilities is 15.6 billion, whereas for the previous financial year it was 14.6 billion, which is 7% increase. So it's mainly due to bank overdraft of 2.3 billion, and our payables also increased by 110 million. Provisions, I think that one also I've explained. It didn't increase much, but it's something that we do as an accounting entry also to do provision for day-to-day and municipal services. So the net total assets is 116.2 billion. Compared to last year, there is a decrease of about 152 million. That it's a net loss basically as a result of the financial performance, I think is what I've explained earlier, as a result of the impairment that we did. Then the next slide is a statement of financial performance. It's just a highlight. Revenue recognized for deferred revenue decreased by 1.6 billion. That was as a result of the delays in certain projects because deferred revenue is linked to that. Impairment loss on receivable increased by 800 million. I must say again on this one to say, as much as government department owe us, for graft standard we need to be prudent. We need to provide for doubtful debts, because in terms of the law, we client department supposed to pay us within 30 days. That's what treasury regulation requires all institutions to do. However, client departments are not doing that, and we have the accounting policy where we then say anything that is older than 12 months, we must then do impairment. That's why then we have an increase of 800 million. So as client department continue not to pay us, this line will then increase because we have to report it like that. Then the next slide is performance again. The total revenue is 14.7 billion, whereas last year it was 15.7 billion. There is a decrease of 6%, and I will explain what were the causes. Revenue from exchange is 10.4 billion, whereas last year it was 11.3 billion. The decrease is as a result of completed projects which were not done on time, so there was a decrease on that. Then revenue from non-exchange, that one, there is no significant increase or decrease. There is no significant increase. Construction revenue, this one is mainly on DOD project. There is a decrease of 28 million. It is also linked to the projects that were delayed. And in that one also, it's just an accounting transaction because we need to report it as a revenue and report also as as an expense. Then total expenses, 14.8 billion. Last year it was 14.5 billion. There is an increase of 2%, and the details are below. I will just highlight where there are significant changes. Or movement. The one that I will want to go through is impairment on receivables, which has increased by 284%. That's the one that I've just explained to say, as clients continue not to pay us, we'll also do a lot of impairment. Hence, it's 1 billion compared to previous year of 281 million. Then the other significant increase or decrease, loss on disposal, transfer of assets, I think that one has decreased by 88%. As you are aware that we are not in a business of disposing properties, hence there is a decrease. But I must say in the new financial year that may increase because there are requests where we are expected to release land without compensation, which then it's a new risk for PMTE because we have this asset portfolio that we are reporting, which is about 100 something billion. So as we get more requests, then it will mean we have to release certain land without receiving anything. So you may then expect an increase for next year in this area. But we are also engaging Treasury on this. Operating leases, it's 4.6 billion, which was 4.1 billion in the previous year. The increase there is aligned to escalation clauses in lease agreements, which is at 5.5%. Property maintenance, there was also a decrease of 1.2 billion. Maintenance provision recognized for the first time in 2016 is the major reason for higher expenditure in that year. Property rates, there is not much movement there. Sundry operating expenses, there was an increase of 22%. The reason for that is because of recognition of municipal service arising from verification of debt project and increase in accrued municipal service expense identified. Increasing in consulting fees paid for verification of debt project and SIU forensic investigation. So the net deficit or surplus for 2018, PMT reported 152 million deficit, which means in the language of private sector, it's a loss of 152 million. As I said earlier, is mainly as a result of the impairment of 1 billion. Then budget versus actual receipt. Here we are just comparing what we budgeted for against the actual receipt. As I said earlier on, we are on graph standard, which is accrual. So here we are just comparing what we budgeted for against cash. It's not necessarily aligned to the financial statement because we are on accrual. But what has happened then, accommodation charges, leasehold, we had a final budget of 4.2 billion. The actual amount that were received is 4.6 billion. The major variance there is as a result of 359 million, which was received as an advance from DOD. Rental debtors, it's not a significant amount and there was no significant political movement there. Accommodation charges, which is a state-owned, it's 6.4 billion budget against the actual receipt of 6.1 billion. I must say here in this area, it's also linked to what clients did not pay us, so it's about 301 million. There are certain clients that just decided not to pay in this area because this is the amount that is supposed not to be used for any other purpose by clients department. But somehow clients departments, as they get funding pressure, this is the area where they decide not to pay us. Documentation, there was no variance there. We claimed, we received everything that we budgeted for. Municipal services, there was we claimed 185 million. We actually received 181 million, which is a variance of 4 million. Construction revenue, the variance is 53 million, which basically is not that material. Then the overall, we budgeted to receive 4.9 billion, 14.9 billion, and we received 14.9. Okay, if I give you the full figures, it gives you a variance of 2.9 billion. So if you look at this, then if you compare budget against what we received, it's not that bad. But if you link them to the data that I've spoken about, that relates to prior years and all that. So I don't think I have to go in details on this slide because I was explaining as I was talking to the speakers. Okay. And then expenditure analysis per program, I think it's also linked to the previous slide, but I can just highlight a few areas. Administration, there was no significant variance then. Real estate investment services, it's 34 million. Construction project management, there is a significant variance there. I think it's linked to also the slow project. However, on that one also, it's linked to reclassification because as we received adverse opinion in the previous year, we had to reclassify certain expenditure. Hence, we received improved audit outcome. So if you look at construction project management of a variance of 438 million against FM of 337 million. So certain amounts there in terms of expenditure, it was reclassified to FM because we realized that in terms of the classification in line with GRAP, we had to do that. So that's why then you see the significant changes between construction project management and FM. I think I won't go into details on this one. I've already explained as I was presenting the figure. Okay. Then the slide number 89 is economic classification. Current payments, I'll just deal with the significant variances there. Cleaning and gardening, there is no significant variance there. Leasing, private owned also, no variance. The major variance is on repairs. I think I've already explained that one, that is linked to FM. So, no, it's not FM, it's plant maintenance. Then on admin, which is goods and services, there is a huge variance of 162 million. That one is mainly due to the write-off that we had to do in terms of the disallowances, which is projects where contractors defaulted. So hence you then see that a huge variance. Then the total current payments was 11.1 billion. The final allocation was 11.1 billion. Against 11.5 billion in terms of the expenditure, which then results to, if you can in line with your main vote, you can say it was an overspending of 362 million. Whereas in PMTE, we look at the overall budget like any company to say what was the overall expenditure against the budget allocation. So overall, if you look at the totals, the PMT actually had a surplus in terms of allocation against budget of 269 million. I'm not going to go into details on the next slide. I think that's all. I'll hand over to Matthias.
Thank you, Mandla. Chairperson, in concluding, with respect to DPW, I think based on our performance for 2017-18, there's a recognition that we need to ensure the inclusion of DPW work opportunities targets in the annual performance plan of the implementing government departments to cause them to take the program more seriously and to report appropriately, to include as well EPWP indicators in the respective EPWP coordinators' performance agreements. This is another initiative to ensure the program is taken seriously and reporting is maximized, as well as fostering integrated planning and budgeting for the implementing departments for target achievement, and then also engaging with public bodies to address their challenges to strengthen the implementation of EPW projects and mainstreaming of EPWP across all sectors and budget lines. Chairperson, we also recognize that in our prestige program, given the consecutive negative audit outcomes, we are focusing on that particular area of our business during the year to ensure we don't have a recurrence, both from a reporting point of view as well as performance point of view. With respect to the policy branch, given the consecutive failures to achieve our targets in that particular area, we believe that we are on track in delivering a policy review in March next year to develop the basis upon which we proceed in that particular area. And then, Chairperson, moving on to the PMT, we want to maintain our gains with respect to the immovable assets register in terms of the improved audit outcomes and also the quality of the register in terms of driving the PMT business. With respect to real estate investment management, Chairperson, I think yourself and the members of the committee have recognized that we have a chronic funding gap with respect to the funding of maintenance of our buildings. And the user charge model is then critical, and this was discussed with National Treasury to guide the levying of accommodation charges to user departments in respect of the usage of the department's immovable asset portfolio. This initiative will be finalized for implementation in the current financial year. So that is important, that we have appropriate funding to carry out our mandate adequately. With respect to planning and precinct development, Chairperson, this is an important initiative that the IGR needs to come to the fore here, because a lack of consultation between the various tiers of government will ensure failure in this particular area. So consultation and IGR is very important to drive the success of the precinct development initiative. Now, Chairperson, when we open our conversation today, we mentioned that this annual report for 2017-18 is located in and must be seen in the context of the respective overlapping phases of the turnaround strategy of the department. We say overlapping because we recognize that in some areas we've had underperformance in the turnaround program to the extent that some turnaround projects are still in a stabilization phase. That is the first phase. And examples include the development of business processes in the PMT as well as IT systems. Those are critical. In fact, the first page of our annual report, the Minister mentions that there are certain systemic gaps in the core business, and that has given rise to the Minister's proposal to establish the High Performance Center to deal with these chronic gaps in the organization. So this is a key initiative to deal with some of our underperformance in the current year. Even though we've improved our performance year on year, the High Performance Center is seen as an important initiative to drive performance further and to deal with certain gaps we've identified in our turnaround strategy. On the governance side, we want to sustain our audit outcomes going forward, as well as introduce a compliance initiative to ensure we maintain our gains in reducing irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure and develop a culture of compliance in the department. And this also goes quite closely, Chairperson and members of the committee, with this integrity management framework which we presented to yourselves in September as introducing a new organizational culture, given the recognition that whatever rules we have in the department. We need a good ethical foundation in order to ensure we perform well and we do the right thing. And Chairperson, in concluding, the Portfolio Committee as well has been a huge influence in how we've developed our strategies and initiatives. And we use an example in that our anti-corruption strategy resolutions at this committee in September has now fed into our EXCO process, as well as with the Minister, to drive a new approach to dealing with fraud and corruption based on your input. So we value your inputs as well as the guidance we've received from the committee to improve our performance year on year in our strategic plan for 2015-2020. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Gigi?
Thank you very much, Sean, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We have come to the end of presenting this report, which we want the committee to consider. We are keen to take contributions, if there are any, and then we can take the process forward. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, PG, Department Official, PMTE. Thank you very much. Honourable Members, it's up to you if you want to take body break, whether it's for 5 minutes or we want to get to the report. Can I get your advice? That is all.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, we must just go to the report and question the report, because it now the time is 25 past.
Is that it? Fine. Dr. Madaba?
Fine. I'm fine.
Okay. Dr. Madaba?
One would like to congratulate the department, Chair, for their improvement in the audit outcome, knowing where the department comes from. So I think there is a great improvement. However, Chair, when the auditor. The AG raised a concern around the issue of the leadership because he indicated that the leadership has provided inadequate monitoring of action plan to address prior year findings, which resulted in similar findings for the current year. If you look at the slide number 21, it's agreeing with what the Auditor General is saying. When we're getting a presentation that strategic objective 11%, but the target was 80%. What they are saying about that 80%, they are saying that it's previous years. You see? Which means to say that when the Auditor General makes a recommendation on how to deal with the challenges of the previous years, the department is not really focusing on that because it's still part of the Auditor General's outcome when it comes to that. So one would want to understand what is it that the leadership of the department going to do about this, because if you see that you targeted 80% and you only achieve 11%, you know, because the time you targeted 80%, you knew exactly that these are previous years' problems that you want to deal with. What is it that you are going to make difference now to address the very same challenge? The other one, Chair, is the issue of the Auditor General's finding that was unable to obtain sufficient audit evidence, you know, for variances and the reported achievements of the indicators under Program 5. what I want to understand, how do you reach to the conclusion that you have achieved something if you don't have an evidence to prove that you have achieved? Maybe the department can share with us so that we understand that how do you conclude that these are the achievements. But when we say, can you produce the evidence that you have achieved that you don't have? So it's something that you maybe will need to really understand as a portfolio committee so that we know how do you work going forward. I'm not going to go on program number three, Chair, because the minister in his opening did deal with it and indicated that the most challenges that we all know is that the Department of Public Works is just coordinated. But if the other implementing institutions are not adhering to what they are supposed to do, my challenge is that because before you were also giving incentives to say that if they are not adhering to the measures, I hear when you were doing conclusions to say that there is something that you want to strengthen going forward, but it's an ongoing concern to us as members, because now you can't say that this is the real information. If now you say 1,100 and something, and the department is saying 900,000, you know. But it's not that you are saying that because you want to say it, because it's what you have. And then when they present more. But also there is an indication that the Auditor General never expressed the findings on the, I think it's an amendment or the correction you did on page 266 going forward. What does that mean in the audit, in the whole audit outcome? If now you were pointed to say do this, and then at the end of the day, we were going to get the very same results according to you if maybe the Auditor General did go through those particular pages that you tried to correct. Also, Chair, I want to request the department to assist us on page 30 of the main document. On budget allocation 2017-2018 PMTE, you indicated that the allocation for 2017-2018 was 14.9 billion as depicted in table 2 below. But I don't see table 2 below. Table 2 below. Maybe, I don't know whether it was, I know that maybe it just disappeared maybe when we were arranging the document and then that thing just disappeared. Also, if you... maybe, Chair. Also, if you look at on page 32, there is an indication that it's 1.10, table 1.10 expenditure analysis per program. Also, you indicated the final allocation as 14.981. But when you go to 300, when you go on page 300, there is an indication of 14.724. And the other one, which is, what is page? Which is 14.5 on the big document. Maybe can you assist us to say which one is the actual that you received or the one that you estimated? Because these are different figures when you look at them. maybe you'll assist us to really understand going forward on that one. Also, Chair, when I'm going towards the closure, when the presentation was done on page 34, there was an indication, I did not hear it very well because I was just listening. There was an indication of a moratorium that was, I don't know, imposed, that led to the failure to perform well around the issue of the project and so on. I think it was the moratorium on the capital budget, sort of. Maybe if you can unpack this for us to say what really happened. You budgeted everything, and then after you have budgeted, there was a moratorium, you stopped, and you never continued. What was the reasons and so on going forward, if I heard very well to say that there was such a thing. On slide number 68, it's just a question of clarity too. You said, we also congratulate you to say that there are no unauthorized expenditure reported to this 2017-2018. That is a job well done going forward, I think, in all the other areas. But I want to check that cash and cash equivalent, including bank overdraft. The bank overdraft was presented, but it said bank overdraft decreased due to less expenditure being recovered from the PMTE. Now, I will need also this to be unpacked. What is the meaning of that to me as a lay person? Does it mean that there was a savings? Or it means to say that there was a failure to action the work that was planned? Clarity on that particular score. And lastly, Chair, I will come back if there is a chance, if there are things that I've... Lastly, Chair, there are issues of the user asset management plan. It's just a request. Is it possible that as a portfolio committee, we are given those copies of the user asset management plan or those plans? So that, because when we do oversight, we want to know exactly who is responsible for what. So we lag on that to say when you go to a certain building, you look at it because it's not there, to say who is really responsible. Because we always point to the department, but sometimes it's not the department, it's the client department. So I think it will be very important for us to receive that. I will lend the chair at the moment and give the colleagues the chair. Thanks.
Can I note that our hands have noted the topic already? Honorable Stoller, Honorable Reda, Honorable Masela. Yeah, that's where I end. Let's move ahead, Dr. B.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Obviously, it's about presentation, so there are lots of issues, but I'm going to try and focus on material and significant issues instead of focusing on some of the issues, like the colleague, like the gentleman says, some of them are petty, but when I get to his presentation, I'll indicate that they might not be as petty as they were. When the minister started, he mentioned that there's been a reduction in irregular and wasteful expenditure. Now, while it's encouraging, in my view, any one rand of wasteful or irregular expenditure is one rand too much. So, and furthermore, while my colleague, and I'm not picking on her, says that there's an improvement, now, an improvement from a disclaimer to qualified for me is not an improvement. It might be better, but the objective has to be a clean audit. That has to be the objective. I mean, that's your work. Your work is that you must account for every cent of taxpayers' money. So I just differ slightly there. So overall, I believe that the department is not performing as well as they should and could. DG, I'm not wanting to use some harsh words now. I'm just saying that the department can improve substantially. If you look at the vacancy rate in the department of 27.9%, then surely it's too much. If you look at the performance of the PMTE in terms of the targets that they have achieved, it's 52%. So it's unacceptable. It has to be unacceptable. So clearly there needs to be a substantial improvement in what they do, because that's what they paid to do. If I refer to the presentation, Honorable Chairperson, I see that on slide number 13 it's mention is made, and I've previously commented on this, of work opportunities. Now there's a figure given. The figure is not important. In my view, when you use a work opportunity as a yardstick, it can't be as accurate, because what is a work opportunity? It's giving one person, giving one person a job for 1 hour. That's a work opportunity. I'm not saying it happens all the time, but that is the possibility. So, and I'm sure the Deputy Minister will agree with me that the FTE would be a better yardstick to use, is your full-time equivalent. So that doesn't really give an accurate picture. So I just wanted to raise that as far as that is concerned. Then if we move further to slide number 15, while I understand you can't do everything in 1 year, but we see at the last bullet point is that the occupational health and safety, there was inspections done by them with reference to the compliance. Now, we know that, well, I know because I asked the minister a question last year, and his response was there are 93,944 buildings that are in a poor to unsatisfactory condition. Now, that should be one of the core responsibilities or duties to determine whether the buildings that are owned and managed by Public Works are in a good condition. So if you look at the figure, I mean, if I look at a quick calculation, it looks like only about 2,000. When are we going to get to the other 91,000? That's our job. That's the department's job. So an effort needs to be made on doing the things that are going to cause, like we've seen recently, where people's lives were lost in Johannesburg because buildings were unfit. So what I'm saying is that the department must just do what they're supposed to be doing. Slide number 21. Slide number 21. Okay. Again, this is where the report is done on program 1, and you see the 11%, 93%, 54%, 86%. Now, I wouldn't get excited when you get those percentages. I mean, surely your percentage must be. That's 100%. That's what you're supposed to be doing. So if you get excited about an increase on certain targets that you've met, I mean, for example, 93% of compliant invoices were settled. Now, these are invoices. Previously, we've heard that the invoices that have been submitted are not compliant or there's errors. But in this case, these are invoices that have been checked. They are compliant. But only 93% have been paid. The entities that are most affected are your small businesses, because a small business cannot afford 1 month of payment. And so we've had an experience, and the chairperson would know, we did oversight in the Transkei, where a business was not paid for 2 years. He did an excellent job, contractor. And as a result of that, there are repercussions because SARS blacklists him, and so forth and so forth. So it has there are serious consequences when this work that should be done by the department is not done. On slide number 24, I want to refer to the, while we're using the work opportunities, again, I mean, there's an appalling target here, 64%, that's the target that's been achieved. This is a safety net for the poorest of the poor, EPWP opportunities. And yeah, we're not meeting targets for a number of reasons. We've heard that there have been false people that have been providing false ID documents. The presenter indicated that there is a situation with regards to reporting. That's one issue. But there are people that are crying out there. I mean, there's 36%. But maybe that's just the way our country is, because that's more or less our unemployment rate. So maybe that's our benchmark. But it's really, it's criminal. It's unacceptable that we have funding. There's underspending here. We've got funding, but the money's not being used for people that need the money most. But other people, they probably make sure that their targets are achieved. Sorry. On slide number... Okay, one more of it. Again, this is information that you've given, so I'm just going to highlight it. It's not something... we on slide number 35, that bullet point 2, the target was 100 million rand saving on identified leases. So it's not a figure that we stuck from somewhere. But the target is only 12 million. I mean, it's 88 million that we should have saved that could have been used elsewhere on EPWP, for example. So it's just clearly unacceptable, Chairperson. If I continue to slide number... Okay, I've done that one. Slide number 73. Yeah, I want to comment on the statement that was made. Sorry, let's get there. Oh, that's just a question for clarification. This is regarding the irregular expenditure, and I see in both years the amounts have been deducted from there, which are amounts that are not condoned as irregular expenditure and are recoverable. How much of that amount has been recovered? Is an amount? Do you have a figure? Not, maybe you won't be able to give us that answer now, today, but can we establish how much of that has been recovered? Because first of all, it's not condoned, so as irregular expenditure. So it is recoverable. How much of that has been recovered? I mean, it's 25 million, 180 million the previous year. Slide number 77. It's ludicrous to say the least. I cannot smile and give a presentation and say that the bank overdraft is 2.3 billion because the departments and the municipalities are not paid. And then furthermore to say that we are a going concern. Or if you want to classify us as not a going concern, then the whole of government. No, it's not acceptable. I mean, how does it get into that situation with 2.3 billion rand of overdraft? Who's going to pay for that? I see interest payments are 85 million. I mean, 85 million, that's a huge amount. Again, it's wasted money that could have been used elsewhere. So by saying that PMT is going concern, it has to be, because if it's not, then we must say that all the other government departments is a going or not a going concern. I think it's short-sighted to make a statement like that. I think a serious effort needs to be made, Honourable Chairperson, that money needs to be recovered. I don't see why the portfolio committee must call those departments into asking why they're not paying. It's the responsibility of the PMT. They must recover that money. I mean, they've been paid to do that, so I think it's just unacceptable. So we see here that the interest that will be generated is 58 million a month. That's a lot of money. Nice, a lot of money. I mean, again, so you're going to have receivables at the end of the year for what, 600 and over 700 million a year. Again, I mean, what you're going to have is a balance sheet or a financial position that states that you are in a good position. But how much of that is recoverable? Because again, you're not going to get that 58 million. That you're not even getting the repayment. So how are you going to get the 58 million rand that you charge in interest? So one needs to look at not ensuring that it doesn't get to a situation where you have so much debt that is irrecoverable that you are having to charge 58 million rand interest per month. So I'm nearly done. I've got slide number... I'm not going to nitpick this. There's just some figures here that are high, and I mean the presenter raised it for us, so I must now just repeat what he's saying. But if I look at impairment on receivables, which is on slide number, okay, it's your statement of financial performance. So again, I mean, why would you impair receivables? Surely, as a more concerted effort should be to get the money. You're not a profit-making organization. So normally, if you're in a private sector, then it's fine, because you don't want to pay tax on income that you're not going to receive. So that impairment of receivables, it's questionable, and why one, I understand it's to make your balance sheet look better, but I don't think it's good practice. And then lastly, Honourable Chairperson, on slide number 89. Okay, yeah, these are, okay. This high amount of repairs, the presenter indicated that those are maintenance, but repairs and maintenance can't be the same, so I was just a bit confused there, but all right, that's insignificant, it's fine. Okay, so Chairperson, I just wanted to raise those issues. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Stoddard.
Qatar.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to presenters. Chairperson, I'm 7 years turnaround strategy is about to, we are now talking about 2018, now next year is 2019. But the target that have been, that's supposed to be achieved by the department is not yet been achieved. My concern, Chairperson, is that one of programs. If you check program 1, program 2, program 3, and program 4, they are all underspent. So the question, Chairperson, is that if they are failing themselves to achieve their target, what actually, how are they going to deliver the service to the client department? Because sometimes the client departments are not paying because they are not satisfied by what they have done to their properties. That's my concern, Chairperson. Another thing, Chairperson, I want to find out. Year after year, we budget for and transfer money to foreign government and international organizations. But I don't remember, Chairperson, receiving the budget spent on those transfers. If we can just get some spend, how did they spend on their transfer? And the other one, Chairperson, is that what I'm trying to find out the figure or from each of client department that are owing to the department, if they can give us figures. Because if they just say client department don't pay, but they must give us the figures, how much do each client department owe to the department? And the difficulties, if they can give us some difficulties, what actually are the difficulties that, why are they failing to pay for what they're supposed to pay? And other Chairperson, I'm worried about the bank overdraft. 2.3 billion is not just small amount. There's a big amount, 2.3 billion overdraft by the department. What is actually, because it's not the first time. If you check in 2016-17, there was that overdraft. Even now there is this overdraft. Actually, how are they going to achieve that they mustn't have this overdraft? And I'm worried, Chairperson, about the other one, the loss of 152 million rand. If they can give us some breakdown and the remedy of that one, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Fildane.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start off with something that has not been mentioned. But as public reps, we don't want to let things that come through the media, you know, go by without us checking if they are true or not. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a report in the media that the CFO of the department was also running a company which was in which he is the sole proprietor, and services of that company were being made use of by the department. What I would like to know is whether that is true or not, and if it's true, how did that come about? He is not in our midst, the man I'm talking about, as it was mentioned in the media. Our analysis is that you have had only a 55% success rate. We gave you 7 billion in Parliament, and you come back to us with a 55% success rate and 45% failure rate, according to the 31 targets that you set. Just in broad terms, how do you explain yourselves? There's 22 officials here, top officials of the department, and people probably reporting to them, and you come to us practically every weekend to guide you and express our dissatisfaction with this and our satisfaction with that. Broadly speaking, Honorable Deputy Minister, together with the DG, how do you justify your existence if you only have, after 12 months, and you got your money in time? How do you explain a failure rate of 45%? I can see that here and there you remark that there were vacancies, but you have got all the tools at your disposal. You know the laws of the country so that people can be employed in time and do the job. We would like to get a broad explanation of how, after full 365 days, you only have a 55% success rate. I'd like to score so that we have got a scientific approach to the matter. That is based on the 31 targets that we have set and achieved 17 out of 10. And we always say, at least I do, as a member of this committee, that the acid test as to whether the money was used appropriately, so to speak, whether there has been any measured socio-economic impact. There's not even a single sentence on that, both with the opening remarks by the minister as well as by the closing remarks, by the DG. The DDG. There's just nothing referring to that. About the only thing which tells us that some money has been spent on people is when it comes to the EPWP. And we're happy to hear that you actually spent 10 billion on those people. But that's another area in which you have failed quite critically. If you're looking at 1.4 and you tell us that you can report on 900,000. Now, the common...
Honorable Tudane.
Yes, sir.
We want to suggest a few minutes break.
Sure.
Our colleague is not feeling good, so that you open that space,
okay,
so that the nurses then would assist to the
place. Okay, sure. I'm sorry about that. I hope my speech will be open.
And let's push the seat so that we open the seat inside.
Thank you. with DC cases.
So I would like to know if you have picked up any causal trend, which is common among so many people that go through the DC. And I think I'm with the last three or so, Chair. On transformation of the construction industry, the deputy, the president recently announced, you know, with much fanfare and enthusiasm, this presidential economic stimulation, you know, program. And when he said something about infrastructure, I immediately thought of this department and about my concern is whether have you developed enough a number of black contractors? Have they been, you know, they upgraded such that they will be able to take advantage of the amount of money that will be made available, you know, for those infrastructure programs? Or is it going to be the same big boys that benefited in 2010? You know, I would like to know if you are satisfied that we have got enough black contractors to be able to benefit from that. And I think this would be about the second last check. You say that government departments owe you a lot of money, and you've given us reasons why they are not coming up with it, well articulated. Now, if you say that you can't sue government departments, what political steps does the political head of the department have at his disposal to deal with this matter? Because honestly, as an official, all you can do is to keep on sending reminders, and you know that you are bound by the policies and laws of the country. You can't really issue summons against another department. But this problem should be solved, you know, politically. What comfort can the political department give us today? And I think that my last question is about provinces and local government. Very, very interesting from an accounting perspective. You report that provinces and local government, who are not normally so smart when it comes to accounting, have spent their money right to the very last cent. I've got a problem believing so. Have you got proof that you could give us at some point? It's exactly what was given to them that is reflected in your schedule as having been spent. Not even 1,000 rands out. I have got a problem believing that. I would request that we agree as committee that we would want proof, you know, thereof, because those are normally not your customers, if I may use that term. Chair, there's quite a few other things that I would have loved to put, but I thought, you know, let me just deal with issues at, you know, at that level. Thanks very much once more for the opportunity.
We want to correct the naughty customers referring to the government. Honourable members, so we want to, you should come, but I think Honourable Masela has to go to another portfolio committee, so I want to give her the opportunity to say a few words. But maybe before you even go, ma'am, there's a rearrangement in terms of our initial arrangement of our meeting. So we're giving more space. We think we should meet. Now this venue won't be available for us. We'll meet at the old assembly, at 3. So we'll afford the other meeting at 2 in 5:40, E540. So we will meet at 3. So that this. You go there knowing. That would be for at 3 o'clock we'll be dealing with this BRRR. So Honorable Masela.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'll try to leave the questions that were already touched, like the one of 30 days, which is very much disturbing. Payments within 30 days. I think Honorable Fick did talk about it. And the other issue, Honorable Chair, is about the issue on slide number 31, 16% bids were awarded within 56 days. I mean, 16%. It is very, very low. Can we get an explanation why and what are the challenges for them to perform that law on that one? The on slide number 34, under the program performance, there is bullet number 4, 5, and 6, which I need clarity on them. I don't understand how it came about for three of them, where you have 106, but you are able to complete 148. What is actually happening there? The three of them are almost the same. There is also, it's just that I don't have the ages report here. The issue of a project in Sardinia, which it was supposed to be completed in 3 years. It was extended for 6 years. Now it's 9 years, something like this. I think we should talk to that one, because as you extend it, even the budget is being increased all the time. What is actually happening on that particular project? The other issue is about on slide number 37, 65% of contracts were awarded to black-owned companies. What magnitude of projects were those? Can we be furnished with the information? Those projects that were given to black-owned companies, can we get information, more clarity on them? How much projects were those? Because maybe it was just small projects which obviously do not make any difference. So if we can get more clarity on that one, I think I'll be fine with it. And the 27.9% of vacancy rate, honestly, it is unacceptable. We need to deal with that one, because we have many people around here who are unemployed, and we cannot allow the situation to go that way. On slide 59, when I check the understanding, all of them is about goods and services, almost all of them. What is the problem? Do we budget more on goods and services? Are we able now to see how we can go out of this for the coming years? Because it seems it's either maybe we have just budgeted a lot of money, dumped a lot of money into the goods and services that we don't need or something. Can we be clarified on that one? The other one, Honorable Chair, is about the on slide number 77, having moved from adverse to qualified. It is an improvement. It is an improvement, but I want to say you can still do more. You can do more than this. Let's go and change the situation, turn it around to be much, much better than this one here. But there is a slight change there. The issue of the way we deal with our sister department, I think we need to do something. Maybe a DM and the minister, maybe, I don't know, you should also get into it. Because it's the policy that is letting by this department, the policy that is being we've been talking about this for quite a long time, that the money that it is with the sister department, but you are supposed to do the work, they are the ones who are supposed to tell you what to do, and people don't take it that way. If a clinic is dilapidated, people will come to public work and say, what about that clinic? Why is it in this thing? And public work cannot get into that clinic unless it is the health which is saying, here's the budget, this is what we want to do, go and renovate it. There's something wrong with this very same policy, which is the one that is always making the department to get deep down into this poor financial management all the time. I think this must be given the first priority going forward. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Rada. Officials, on the question of Benin, you can also add other projects. AG
the list of projects. Maybe go to 11 or so, but others are including IDC. Those that are to do with yourselves, I think they are around 7 or 8. Maybe answer to them, because it's like it's a norm for you, you just can't plan. If you say the project will go for 3 years, will go for 91 million, so it can then mean 10 years. It is really making you a joke, to be honest. You're not serious, learned people. But you are learned, but you can't plan things properly. You can't even call stakeholders to plan. I think that thing is embarrassing. It's just bad. Remember, we rely on you. South Africa rely on you. Now, looking at those projects, you can't make mistakes in all these projects. You can't have a foresight. You have planners, you have all the stakeholders, engineers, everybody, architects, everybody cannot plan. You miss a 3-year project by now adding 10 more years. You expect us to smile and say, no, I'm not as smart. You are not. As you answer at this other project, which is Honorable Raider.
Thank you, Honorable Mameza.
Mameza.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I think that I'm going to start not necessarily with your presentation and not focus very much on your presentation, but more on the AG's presentation that they gave us last week, because I think there's some key issues there. Your presentation is directed in one way, but it's not necessarily addressing the issues that have been highlighted. So, yes, if we can start with what Mayor Masiala has highlighted, and perhaps the chair as well. Before we do that, let's say well done, first of all, on slight improvements. But as Honourable Fig pointed out, you know, an improvement from the naughty corner to the naughty chair is not much of an improvement. It's moderate at best. So consider yourselves, you know, you're in the right direction, but there's plenty of work ahead. And I don't believe that the work over the past year has justified big applause at all. I think it's fine. It's nothing to write home about. But yes, I think that we must remind ourselves why we're here. And looking at those projects that the Auditor General highlighted, upgrade of CMAX, Skoopatnik border post, Van Reinskoop correctional facility, are issues where the Auditor General highlighted them. It's a need for correctional facility, Standerton, etc. Now, go back to last year's discussion that we had. And Chair, I brought the questions that we had from last year. And guess what's listed here? Skoopatnik border post, CMAX, on Reinstorp Correctional Facilities. These issues haven't necessarily been properly addressed, and I think that's my biggest concern, is that the stuff we were talking about last year has been rehashed a little bit and brought back to today. So when we sat with the Auditor General last week, they gave us a picture, and certainly, I mean, there were some pinks that changed to green and yellow, so well done. But the reality is that some of our core functions are still lying in tatters, and I am going to get an indignant response from this in a minute, okay? But when I asked the question to the Auditor General, is the asset register still on an Excel spreadsheet, the answer was yes. Now, over the past year, Chairperson, this committee has asked this question time and again, and we've been misled. And I'm going to preempt that indignant response and say, don't tell it to me, tell it to the Auditor General. Because the fact is that our asset register still lies on an Excel spreadsheet and is at massive risk. This is reflected in some of the performance areas that we have. And the fact is that I also want to talk to your presentation. Some of the way that you're reporting here makes it quite difficult for us to interpret. And I'm not sure if that's the intention or not. But surely when you're reporting budget figures and performance figures, a good way to report it, or the correct way to report it, will be baseline, target, and actual. The fact that Public Works has presented their figures in a certain way and PMTE have presented theirs in a very different way, Public Works have highlighted certain things, PMTE have highlighted other things, shows that you're cherry picking and you're showing us what you want to show us and hiding quite a lot of information. So when one starts to dig through the annual financial report, there's some little nasties that come out, and I think I'll get to those a little bit later. I just wanted to refer to two more pages in the AG's report, where they spoke about assurance provided and the status of internal control. And Public Works was looking fine, but PMTE, the Auditor General has highlighted to us that they are not at all happy, that's the little pink bit over there, with the status of your internal controls and also with the assurance provided by the level of professionalism in your senior management levels. So I think it's a red flag, and it's something that we need the Minister and the Deputy Minister to give us some comfort going forward, that the senior leadership issues are going to be resolved. And resolved, you know, nothing is permanent, but as permanently as possible. Because the fact is that the shuffling of the chairs keeps happening, and the changes in leadership is repeatedly and consistently blamed for some of the challenges that we're facing. So, Chairperson, if I may, I want to look at, as I said, let's look at the annual report rather than specifically the figures provided by the department on their presentation, because they're a little bit more meaningful. And I'm not going to harp too much on Public Works, specifically because of the time issues, but I think that we spoke last year, and the Deputy Minister and I had an interaction about knitting, and we spoke about white papers that needed to be reviewed. And the fact is that you've reported to us that we've got the policy documents that have been, policy frameworks that have been reviewed, but they haven't been translated into white papers. And not meeting that target is critical to the success of Public Works going forward. Until you know what your knitting is, you're not going to be successful. So I think that is one target that, not meeting that target is a shockingly bad reflection on the department as a whole, and I think it's something that certainly needs to be prioritized going forward. The other thing is, please, Chairperson, I'm begging the department to take us into their confidence. We're finding out about these policy frameworks here at the annual report, but why not submit them through the process? Give us an opportunity to read them. If there's a white paper in draft format, submit it to us. We are, after all, part of the same team that's trying to get South Africa working. So, you know, some of our inputs are valid. I think it was acknowledged earlier on. So if there's a draft document, let's push it forward. Let's discuss it and get it out there. Even if it doesn't come through the formal meeting program, you know, these things can be circulated. You've got our email addresses. Let's start working together. The other thing I wanted to speak about was Program 3, EPWP. As has been said, we've heard the stories over and over. The way to get around that is to sort of finalize your guidelines. We spoke about the guidelines 6 months ago. We spoke about them 3 months ago. We spoke about them a year ago. Finalizing those guidelines, getting those things out there, will then force your provincial and your local government departments to start performing and assisting you in getting your information correct. I want to ask Public Works, on the annual report, page 238, there's a little thing that has escaped mention but is quite important for me. Note to the annual financial statements, 12.4, it says other debtors. There's an amount listed as breach of contracts in bracket bursaries of 1.1 million rand. I certainly need that explained, please. If you can just tell me, is the staff members that we've funded that have breached their contracts, and what is our recourse for that? There was a brag that the overdrafts of Public Works is down by 475 million. Well done, except for you mentioned that it's closely linked to PMTE, and guess what? PMTE's overdraft is up by 406 million rand. So it's not an overall improvement, it's just a case of shifting blame. There's still accusations that perhaps that was the intention of the establishment of PMTE. So let's talk about the overdraft while we're talking about it. I want to pick on your comments about not being able to take other government entities to court. And I presume that you've heard that. But I want you to research, please, because that comes from Chapter 3 of the Constitution. And if you have a look at Sirius that, paragraph 41, 6 says, avoiding legal proceedings against each other. Well, guess what? If they owe us money, and we're trying to collect, the way to avoid the legal proceedings is for them to pay. It's not us that is the problem in the story, it's the user department. And if you look at paragraph 41.3, it actually relates, it says 41.3, an organ of state, blah, 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 it still says you can approach a court if necessary, okay, provided that you've gone through the steps of intergovernment resolution. So please have a look at the IGR Act number 13 of 2005. It gives you loads of steps that you can follow. I can tell you right now that a 1 billion rand impairment line is not acceptable. As a banker of 20 years, I'm telling you right now that your overdraft facility with your bank is in massive danger with a 1 billion rand impairment. The bank is going to review your facilities in their annual review, and they're going to place certain requirements on this department that we're not going to be able to achieve. The department is then going to be in the same group as ESCOM, as SIA, where we actually need I think it's 2.6 billion in total between the department and PMTE. 2.6 billion rand bailout is what we're going to need, because those debts are not going to be recoverable, if that's what we say. So the fact is, use the IGR Act, Act number 13 of 2005. It gives you recourse, it gives the Minister and the Deputy Minister a lot of power, and it enables you to collect your debt. If the departments are still not paying what is rightfully due, there is still recourse to the courts. Okay? And it's not going to be public works that are the proverbial Farka and Ivaal. I'm not sure if there's another translation of that one, but it won't be us that is the problem child. It will be the user departments that are not paying us. We're in court because of their actions, not because of our own. Good. Moving on to PMTE properly, I think that operationalization has still not been achieved, and that is evident. It was stated by the AG. It's across the line. I wanted to pick on some of the programs and just say that the performance really just hasn't been up to standard. If you look at program 1, target 1, you've got a baseline of 2.9, a target of 3.8, and you achieved 2.9. So there's been absolutely no change on that. Program 2 relates a little bit to the implementation of GIAMA, and I'm pleased to see that there seems to be some movement in that. Again, I'm asking the PMTE to take us into their confidence. We've spoken about, we've received 43 UAMPs. Fantastic, good move. We wanted to see those. And we've submitted the CAP. Okay. Can you please take the committee into your confidence and let us have copies of those asset management plans? Because that is going to help us to with the budgeting process. Because it's one thing to have a plan, but that plan needs to be funded. And without the funding of that plan, it's a waste of paper, time, and effort. Okay. So, my question really is, are the 43 user asset management plans properly interrogated and managed? Okay. Is the CM properly funded? And how is performance managed on that? Deputy Minister, note that there's no performance management line based on actually implementing or managing that CAMP, and I think that asset management plan, the performance on that perhaps needs to be brought in with some sort of a measurement in terms of actually getting GIAMA properly implemented. Good. Program 3, again, the first one, there's a comment about the, there we go, Program 3, top of page 85 of the annual report. Some client departments such as DCS, confirm budgets, allocation late, etc., etc. You're at the mercy of other departments to meet your target. You need to change your target. The target reading is not correct. Okay. So you are only measured on what you can achieve yourself. So change the wording of your target. You know, having things that saying, well, you know, it's outside of our control, it's not an excuse any longer. You need to put smart targets in place, please. Program 4, let's pick on Program 4 a little bit. The AG says that we are overpaying on certain leases. How? Now, we speak about some savings that were made, and there was a nice big target of savings, and we didn't achieve all of them. But the fact is, how are we overpaying on leases? If there's an agreement in place that we must rent a building for 100 rand a month, okay, how are we paying 110? That's not acceptable. In terms of our financial controls, there's a problem there. And Program 4, you need to really sort that out. Chairperson, I wanted to also point to the fact that many of our key targets have gone backwards. So things like percentage of compliant invoices settled within 30 days. It's on page 86, Program 1. Target is 100%, baseline is 87%. We actually only did 84% this year. Okay, that's why, Chairperson, the baseline, target, and actual figures are so important to interpreting the performance of the department. 84% is a movement backwards. The same goes to percentage of bids awarded within 56 days. Okay, 65% was the target, baseline 31. We only did 16%. That is a shocking performance. Quotations awarded within 30 days. Again, down from 75 down to 73. I'm not going to hop on every single one, but the movement backwards on some of these key and really basic issues that form the core of the business of the PMTE are not great. I then want to look at the percentage of valuations completed within scheduled time frames. And there's a couple of issues here, and I think that these are really soft targets, because you've got a target of 85% of valuations completed within scheduled time frames. So the target was only to do 296. So it's listed as overachieved. We've overachieved because we did 297. We've got 90,000 buildings. How can we only be aiming to do 300 valuations, less than 300 valuations in a year? That's incongruent. It doesn't make sense. And I think this is specifically pointing to what Honourable Fufana was mentioning just now. You've spent 100% or close as damn it, 100% of your budgets. You've only achieved 50 to 55% of your targets, and some of those that you've achieved are really soft targets and perhaps not correctly set. There's another one here. Number of buildings performance measured as identified in identified performance areas. 703 buildings performance measures. 703 out of 90,000 is not acceptable. I think you need to stretch yourselves a lot more, and we need to remember the reason that we're doing this. The chairperson himself said it the other day, South Africans don't eat paper. South Africans require service delivery on the ground, and that is something that we need to pursue. We need to remember what we are doing this for. I have a note here to say page 95 of the annual report. There is some overachievement that was listed there. Maintenance contracts in place. I think that there were some positive overachievements that happened on that. And the contracts awarded to black-owned companies as well. Nice achievement. Ah, yes. And specifically, page 96, the reduction in water consumption. Specifically noting that the water issues in the country at the moment, there was an excellent achievement in terms of that, and I thought that needed to be acknowledged. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Advisor. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time because even advised that the restaurant would be closing by 2. So members should be there before 2. And meaning we are then suggesting that the answers to the question should write them down nicely and neatly, send them to the committee secretary by close of business tomorrow,
I think this question was indeed helping you. I think the strategic position of public wealth and PMT is very important for South Africa to change. The document the honourable members was raising high is called Act 108 of 1996. It's the supreme law of the country. So among the key areas instruction from the Act is that all of us must reverse the imbalances of the past. If you are in office, in particular of public wealth with your entities that are very relevant to change the plight of the people who were marginalized previously, and you do nothing, or you do little, then we are not helping to change South Africa. So we have a duty. You spoke about transformation. You know, your entities must reflect. You know, it's easy to talk about it, but what we see on the ground does not help your case. We need more. We need more, unfortunately, and we can do more. So those areas, there's even a weaknesses of using fewer contractors that are known, overusing them. If I can count five, you see those contractors almost in every province. It's like South Africa belongs to them. Okay, they are black, okay? They are women, okay? But we have so many women contractors, so many black contractors. It can be, I nearly mentioned one of them. But don't do it. Influence your client department to work towards empowering everybody. South Africa belongs to all who live in it, not to friends. So I think PMT, I agree with the member. So as you were presenting your report, it was like you received a clean audit report. The way you were so happy, you were so at home, all of you, your presentation, even Nonge, you were just fine. You were like people who have done the work. You have not done the work. Remember, public work is the entity that must influence other departments. You are the D department. So you must understand your strategic position. That is very, very important. Whether we talk small harbors, governor, where's governor? You are around. So wherever we know that, you know, the auction economy, public work, you have all the influence to really uplift the ordinary South Africans, even in the rural areas, in the informal settlement, also try to spread the cake. Not talking about South Africa not belonging to all won't help if people don't see it. They only see few South Africa belonging to few. They can mention, as like Joanna Christopher says, you can mention the family. Same family, but it can be then in your department, in your entities. Your entities must show a difference with at least people, everybody must, as they say, there's an opportunity. Even when you say others are paid within 30 days, who? Because there was a contractor in the Kenkule Clinic, Neon Tata, it was not paid for 2 years, because it's not part of those that are a focus. South Africa belongs to all who live in it. Only your friends. So it should be like that. You see, your actions, remember, they speak louder than words. You see, so remember, we're all employees of South Africans. In particular, the poor. Remember, the poor are the majority. We must prioritize them. We must uplift them. People who are nobody.
people are nobody, we must make them somebody. Florence? People who are nobody, we must make them somebody. So I think that should be the forecast in all the entities. We don't think we will see it. We will see people who were good people during apartheid. They are even more now, more better. Ninani, you are occupying positions. For what? Is it for the better of the poor? For as long as you are there. No, please, South Africa belongs to all who live in it. Please, whatever you do, these projects that are not moving, they are not reflecting good. So can we agree then that IDT, Department, DG, DM, IDT, PMTE must do better. Even others, in terms of the contractors, trying to really change the plight, change South Africa that we know. Let's see, the construction industry must benefit many people than fewer. So, but improve IDT on IDT, closer monitoring, PMTE closer monitoring. I think the honorable members have said a mouthful in terms of there are areas that is in the ordinary South Africa when they see the EPWP, we must prioritize, because indeed, like the honorable members were saying, it's for the poor. It's not really nice. It's not a nice job. But for those men and women, it's a big deal. Let's ensure that it is done the way it should be. It must help. You can't still have empty spaces there. Push, push, push. Don't expect things to happen without you pushing. Is even this thing that you think the treasury must collect money for you, you call them. Go from the minister, DM, everybody, do everything to get your money. Don't expect miracles to happen without you putting effort. Put effort. So I think if we agree, then we'll expect your answers by close of business tomorrow, because we think that we will also be going to also look into our BRRR report. You said at 3 in the old assembly, this may be used by others. So can we then appreciate DM and the minister for really attending? It's always good when the people who are heading the department are there. Let's ensure we're doing the bit, let's improve, don't give up, continue fighting, continue making things better. So our rough words are not like we don't love you any longer. You're very good, you look very good, you dress well. So, but fix the areas that we are complaining about, including those that we did even in last years. So can we, honourable members, because we must rush before they close for lunch. So can we then say we are done for the day, the meeting is closed.
I'm good, man.